right. Thank you, Madam Clerk, and welcome to second day of our budget hearings for 2009, as is our tradition. We'll start with flag salute. If you'd rise and join me, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yeah, play hardball. So, with that, I think it is, in fact, traditional to start with a short recap of yesterday's events. We have a memo before us. Mr. Buckshy, anything notable to tell us about there?
Andrea
can speak to that. Sorry. Yeah. Hello.
Good morning, board members. My name is Andrea McGarvey, and I'm with the auditor's office, and you made my job very easy yesterday. You made absolutely no changes to the proposed budget nor to the sub-doc, and those entries are in front of you in the schedules in the back. And we did add another $99,000 to contingencies, so that was a good thing, too. That was one of the sub-doc items. So we continue to be over 4% of general fund appropriations.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Hill?
Yeah. Andrea, real quickly, where did the $99,000 that we added to contingencies come from, please?
There was a change in the Sheriff's Department's budget for an intra-fund revenue that was in error. So it was like more of a correction than a savings.
Thank you.
Eliminated one car, Adam.
I've seen more of those cars for the last 24 hours.
right in the rear view mirror. Yeah.
Okay,
all right. So let us get down to business here. We're going to start with the fiscal and administrative functional area, and I suppose it would be Mr. Buckshy who will walk us through the business there.
Yes, here we go. All right, brief overview on fiscal and administrative. As you can see, about 5% of the total budget, about 198 positions, which equates to about 8% of the total budget. It is recommended to reduce about 11 positions or 5%, as you can see here. There is a supplemental document request from the admin office that was to change some of the staffing slightly. It was not a net increase or decrease, just changing how a career series is. And we request that be withdrawn at this time, given the changes and uncertainty in the office at this point. Thought it best to wait to make these changes until a later date. In terms of civil service level impacts for the departments that are included in fiscal and administrative, as you can see here, potentially reduced internal audits due to the reduction of staff in the auditor controller's office, a longer time frame to complete the tax roll this year, as Mr. Tom Bordenauer had noted, they requested a two-week extension to complete the tax roll this year, which is something they hadn't done for a while, likely to be the case next year. We'll see how that plays out. And then position is eliminated from the Organizational Development Fund Center, which would likely result in some reduced data gathering and a lot of the good-to-do stuff, but not the must in terms of mandates, such as gathering citizen data, community data, employee opinion surveys, strategies due to the loss of that position. And that concludes the overview of fiscal and administrative.
All right. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Buckshy? Seeing none, would offer opportunity for any of the department heads in that functional area or their representatives if they wanted to come forward and speak. And see Mr. Ordinaro moving to the front here. Yeah.
Okay, where do we do this from again?
Well, I think if you pull straight up, it sounds like you're getting in range here. I hear your voice.
Better?
Yeah, try that.
Bring me up. All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak a little bit. I just want to talk about our budget very briefly. As you know, we're in a somewhat of a declining real estate market that continues to provide challenges. We're this year working close to about 40,000 decline in value residences that we have reviewed. I think you all had early updates on that And at one point, we had estimated lowering the values, lowering the assessment roll by about $1.7 billion. It looks like that, our estimate was pretty close, looks like about $1.6 billion. But with the change of ownership and the new construction that we believe is still out there, we believe that we can get to a 0% growth, which, you know, where we're used to a positive growth in our assessment roll, we believe we'll get to a 0% or a flat growth, if that makes any sense, which also means a 0% decline. Relatively speaking, that's a heck of a lot better than many other counties in the state of California. I talked to my fellow assessor in Sacramento yesterday. They're looking at a 17% decline in their assessment roll. So in some respects, that's good news for San Luis Obispo County relative to the rest of the state. But I'd like to mention that in the early 90s of our last real estate market decline, we had about, we're already over double of what the decline in values were then. So this is obviously something much worse than we saw in the 90s. What that does for our office, though, is our workload skyrockets. We have from January 1st to around June 30th to turn over the roll. We have to look at those properties every year from now on, so our workload will be increased into the future. Much more so than in an escalating market, which is somewhat counterintuitive when you think about what the assessor's function is. So our workload is going to continue to be a challenge. We've actually asked for an extension of the roll this year, and we're going to take it out to around July 17th instead of June 30th. Those other 17 days hopefully will give us enough time to get a lot of the change of ownership, new construction items back onto the assessment roll, so we can get to that 0%. I have to do the decline in value assessments first. The law only allows us a year to pick those up. It allows 4 years to pick up permits and change in ownership. So that work that adds to the roll actually takes the back seat to that work that reduces the roll. In our proposed budget, and we did have five open positions last year that helped us. In fact, we absorbed the COLA entirely in our department with those five vacant positions and with BTO that our staff stepped up and volunteered for. And our budget does include the loss of four staff members, two administrative assistants, two appraiser trainees. The administrative assistants function is going to be absorbed by another section of our office that can handle the workload. These are our transfer technicians. Their work, obviously, with change ownerships down, recordings are down, they can handle the function of those administrative assistants temporarily until we see the market come back, and we will see this real estate market come back in San Luis Obispo County. I don't know when that is. If I did know and if I could predict the real estate market, I would not be here before you today. I'd be retired somewhere, probably in Hawaii. But be that as it may, the part that gives me some concern is the loss of the appraiser trainees. When the market does come back, we are going to have to be able to move rather quickly to try to get all those, to increase back up those prop 8s, those decline in values, and also to keep up with the workload. It does take a couple years to train one of our appraisers, so there's lead time involved. So I see a backlog of work over the next several years. In fact, the last run-up, it took, I think, 3 or 4 years for us to actually catch up once the market took off. So it seems like we're always under workload issues. The only time we wouldn't be is if the real estate market were perfectly flat, and that just does not happen in the state of California. Our staff is also committed to VTO time to make our budget goals this year, quite a bit of hours that will save our at least one position in the office, $75,000 worth of VTO. And since we are 91% salaries, that does go a long way. The other area of concern that I have is that we are we propose in our proposed budget not to send out assessment notices. We send out proposed assessment notices in June and July. Let people know rather early in the game what their value is going to be, so they have plenty of time to ask for a review. We do quite a few internal reviews of our proposed assessments, and then they have an appeals period, a formal appeal available to them from the appeals board. Those notices, we believe, help us fend off appeals because it gives us much more time to work on if there's an issue that a homeowner may have, whether it's us having to educate or going back and fixing something that we might have missed, we didn't have the information at the time. That is going to be saving us $29,000 in the short run. We don't know what the effect of that is going to be on appeals. Our appeals have tripled from 1 year to the next without it, and we're sending out notices this year, so it's not going to be a problem this year, but next year those notices will not go out. The notice will actually be the tax bill. Under the law, these notices that I send early are not required, but we do believe that it's one of the reasons why we have one of the lowest appeals rates in the state, and actually the lowest appeals rate in counties our size, because we have ample time to work out issues with the homeowner. That $29,000, that's a saving in forms of postage. It could very well dramatically increase our appeals. We just don't know, because we've never been there, so it's kind of uncharted territory. And the result of that could have impact the clerk's office and the assessment appeals. We only have 5 hearings, I believe, scheduled a year, and that could significantly impact their budget also if the lack of these notices cause a dramatic spike in our assessment appeals. So again, my staff is diligently working. They're doing a phenomenal job. We usually employ overtime during this time of year to get all of our work done. We're not doing that this year. So the staff is under I guess triple pressure to get all the workload to get the work accomplished. They're getting through it, and hopefully on July 17th when I can report back to you that, you know, it's really funny that my goal is 0%, but we're trying to get as much on the roll as possible so that that will not further exasperate the tough challenge you have of trying to make this a very difficult budget year. So I'm available for questions if you have any, but ask that you support our proposed budget that's before you.
Thank you, Mr. Bordenaro. We have Mr. Patterson up here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bordenaro, just to be clear, on the assessment notices that you typically send out, did you say you would just be late with those this year, or you're not going to send them?
This year they're going out. It will be for next year that they will not. So, in fact, many people have already received notices. I don't know how many of you have received your notices. Gotcha. But the ones that we are currently that are under review for a decline in value, those have not gone out yet. They'll go out in June and July, depending on when the work. I believe actually they will all go out in July now that we've extended the roll. But it'll be next June and July that we won't see the notices go out.
Okay, and you mentioned the appeals and how currently you have a very low rate because you're able to work out the issues with the property owner, and it never gets to that level, apparently. But would you briefly describe what that process is?
Sure. The appeal is filed with the clerk of the Board of the Appeals Board. I think there's a $30 filing fee now, and then it is set for hearing, and it is a quasi-judicial board, of your board, appointees of yours, and it's very time-consuming, very expensive for us to prepare an appeal. It's very time-consuming for the clerk and also the appellant. And our estimates, I believe, and I don't want to quote, but it takes around four or five times to prepare an appeals packet for the board than it does to do a regular appraisal. So the less appeals we have, the more work we can get done, because our appraisers do go back and put together a formal packet for the appeals board. We come in, we make our cases, you know, we have to make the case within 10 minutes. The appellant has their opportunity. And normally, in a day, if we get through 8 or 10 appeals in an entire day, that's a pretty good day. So you can imagine what would happen if our appeals skyrocketed. Last year, I think we had about 300, which was pretty high. And we still work a lot of those out prior to them getting to the board because there is time. And what it does is it delays the homeowner. They'll have to pay whatever the assessment is or whatever their tax bill is until we can get to that appeal. And with the number of appeals dates that we have on calendar, that could be a year later or even two. We have 2 years to clear up an appeal. So in the meantime, that homeowner then is paying whatever their assessed value is until they can get before the court. And it does hold up. It does hold up the system. It's appeals are not necessarily. I think I wouldn't qualify most appeals as any type of win-win for either the taxpayer or the county. We have to invest a lot of time in those. The homeowner has to invest the time in those. And then I would think that some of the larger appeals we concentrate our resources in, whether they be maybe the hospitals or cable companies. Those are extremely time-consuming and extremely expensive. However, usually the dollars on the table are much higher. So we concentrate our resources into those versus single-family residents.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Shajic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bordenaro, since next year you won't be issuing those
notices
within something we're accustomed to receiving them until such time that we'll get the real invoices or bills or notice, would you then be able to extend the appeal time?
The appeal time is then pushed back also.
Okay, so that's a balance that we have.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The problem is there's no time really for those informal reviews before they have to file the appeal. So this gives us more time. Because if we can get them out, for instance, we had some out in May. So they've got from May all the way till really September for us to clear it up. And so it does, there is an extended period of time if we do send the notices. Okay. Even though we do, the appeal date is pushed out a little bit further, there still is more time for our...
I just want to be sure that we take some services out, but we'll offer something in return. So
right. And it's an unknown. I just don't know how. People are very used to getting their assessment notices. We may be flooded with phone calls that's going to tie up our system when we don't send out the notices. It's just a question mark, but it's something that, we can give up that's not mandated that would help. It saves us another a half a position. As I said, I think that our staffing levels right now are at the very minimum of what we need to get the job done.
All right. Mr. Buckshire.
I just, excuse me, wanted to piggyback on a few of Tom's comments. Yesterday when we discussed the overall approach to the budget, it noted that on average the non-public safety departments were a minus 5% of general fund support compared to the prior year. The assessor's office is one exception to that. They were kept at the same level of general fund support. The reason being in discussions with the department, if we went further below that, it would jeopardize the ability to complete the tax roll. May not be able to complete as many properties, and we would potentially lose more money in property tax revenue than we're saving on the cut side of things. In terms of the approach, the positions that are proposed for elimination are vacant and have been vacant for a while, so I believe the capacity is roughly the same as it's been for some point in time. And one of the additional points, I don't know if this is what Mr. Seebach may be speaking to, is there is a ripple effect of not completing the roll on time, because to the extent that the assessor's office doesn't complete it, then the auditor's office has to make manual revisions to the roll, which is very time and labor intensive and simply non-productive. So we want to avoid that, and that's the rationale for the approach with the assessor's office. We're very cognizant of the fact that property taxes are the biggest revenue source for the county and don't want to make cuts that would jeopardize revenue base.
Thank you. Mr. Seebach? Or is
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to refute everything that the assessor said.
No, this is going to be way more interesting than I was expecting this morning. So.
No, I'll just take the chance to say a couple things about the auditor's budget. We are not at issue. We work very hard to work with the administrative office in preparing the budget, and we don't like being at issue. But we do have significant impacts from this. You saw on the board, it said reduced internal audits. We have lost, if you remember, tragically, our chief internal auditor died on the job this last year, and we have not replaced him. That's one of the three positions that we're losing this year. We also lost, we have a couple of positions that are going to be vacant at the six-month point when they retire. We have another position we lost last year. So we are down, and there will not be as quick response on some things as we have in the past. But the way that, well, in just in the last 2 years, we have reduced two administrative assistants and an account clerk and a half of an account clerk, so actually four bodies to some extent. Because of the automation, we're finally realizing the savings from the ERP system that we put in. It's getting streamlined. The departments are working well with it. And the integrated document management system, which we've been working on for a number of years, has been streamlined, and we're now not even filing invoices. For example, we had 5 years' worth of invoices and files, paper files. Those are gone. It's all in the computer now. It's accessible just as of this month. All departments can go in and drill down and see that. So that reduces phone calls to us and a savings in storage. So the technology is, we are reaping the benefits, not just in our department, but in all departments. And that has been the only way we've been able to continue and produce the work that needs to be done. Someday I would like to get the chief internal auditor back. That's important to have that better supervision of that function in this county. One of our other managers is sucking it up right now, basically doing two jobs. But that really is not ideal for the long run. That we'll be talking later then at another day. Any questions?
Yeah, mine goes along the lines of technology. I'm glad to hear that, you know, investments we've made in the enterprise financial system, or you had a different acronym for it. And as I understand it, we've got a major upgrade underway or soon to be underway in that. And I was wondering, what can we expect? Do you have a group that gets together to see how we can exploit that automation for improvement?
Yeah, there's a seven-member department head steering committee that has met from the very beginning. It gives overall direction. Then there's a group of stakeholder departments that meet monthly. We have weekly meetings with IT, the actual worker level people. So there's quite a structure, and there is a cooperative effort to prioritize things. And you're correct. Right now, they are actually working now. There's an interdepartmental team, mostly our department and IT, but some others are helping, that's putting in an upgrade. Now, that one is mostly behind the scenes. It goes from this kind of processor to that kind of processor. The biggest benefit will be in the portal. That's where people go in and enter their time cards. It's a web-based thing, and they can look up their tax status. They can look at their remuneration statement. They can change things, their address and stuff like that. We hope to expand that so people can do more on their own without having to write a memo or a call down to their department or to us. The biggest benefit of this particular upgrade is behind the scenes. It moves from a 32-bit to 64-bit technology. Don't ask me why it's something about a wider bandwidth or something like that.
All about bandwidth, Mr. Seabach. Yes, sir.
Wider highway instead of a narrower.
There we go. So. Could be faster.
All right. Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Seabach?
Thank you.
Have the clerk recorder actually right behind you, Mr. Freitas, and you're up next. She was moving first.
Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I can't miss my opportunity to come and speak to your board again. We also don't have anything at issue. Just a couple of things to highlight after Tom was talking about the Assessment Appeals Board. One of the things that obviously when we're faced with these challenges, it also gives us opportunities. And we may be coming back to your board. Katrina and I have discussed different options about assessment appeals and maybe better ways to conduct those hearings. And there are, I think they're called administrative something, and now I can't remember, assessment appeal hearing officers, that we may be coming back with you for a proposition to use those instead of our full assessment appeals board if we get huge increases in our appeals so that we can better move those along. Right now, our board only meets 6 times a year, partly as a cost-reducing reduction, but also because we didn't have that many appeals. So we may have to be coming back and relooking at that. Tom's discussed that, too, as we get more and more appeals on those days. So we may be coming back to you sometime in the next year with that kind of a proposal. Just an update off of yesterday, we talked about changes with the state budget, and we heard this morning the the LAO's office has recommended that the SB 90s not be cut for our absentee ballots and our permanent absentee ballots. So as of this moment in time, we will have funding if they include that. But I think in a larger picture, it gives us an opportunity to urge the legislature to look at opportunities to cut costs, not just say we're not going to pay you anymore, but look at ways that we can make changes to the laws that allow us to better administer our elections in a more cost-effective way with getting more resources to our voters instead of just looking at the traditional, just stop paying the counties for absentee ballots and they can make the decision whether or not they want to issue them anymore, which, as we all know, that would be not a very popular decision. So I think it does give us those kind of opportunities. And the last thing I want to say, unlike Tom's office, we see a decrease in workload. We are down the one position that we're giving up. We're also leaving another position unfunded at this point because we want to see what's going to happen with the state budget for next year. But we do see a decrease in recordings, but those things turn around very quickly depending on the economy. And so one thing that I want to urge your board and the administrative office is that when things do pick up mid-year, as I'm really hopeful that they will, that we look at being responsive to returning staffing to an adequate level to be able to accommodate the additional work that's coming in. Because like I say, it happens very quickly. Our recordings went back in the heyday of the refinancing boom. Our recordings went from 110,000 to 140,000 in 1 year, and that's very hard to just have staff assimilate all that extra work. We are putting new technology into place. Auto indexing is going in this week and next week so that we'll be better prepared when that happens, but we still may have to come back to you and say, hey, we now have that revenue that is able to fund another position, and so I would hope that you would look at that hopefully mid-year in this upcoming fiscal year. Thank you.
Thank you for being our resident optimist here.
It's
good. We've been waiting. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Rodewald, you spoke to potential legislation that would improve efficiencies and reduce costs, and you've spoken to us about, you know, opportunities to do that you really can't do because the legislation isn't in place, like for example, mail-in ballots for special elections and that sort of thing. Do you and or your County Clerks Association have recommended legislation that we could support with our legislators to do those things that you've mentioned?
Yeah, right now there's a bill in progress, and I'll have to find out exactly what the status of it is, that would allow just that. At County Option, to conduct special elections as all-mail ballot elections. That won't have as big of an effect in our county because we don't do a lot of legislative special elections. It's being it was written by LA County, who probably has a special election at least every other month, if not every other week, because of legislative vacancies. And somebody's you have a Senate seat vacant or a congressional seat vacant, so the state senator runs for that. Now you have a Senate seat vacant, and then you have a assembly seat vacant. So they're constantly doing them. It will help us if we have special elections. For instance, in the city of Paso Robles, we'll be conducting a special election for them. So it would give at least counties and cities that option at the local level. But I'd like to push to see it done on a much greater basis, and even getting to the point where by county option, we are allowed to go as an all vote by mail with vote centers set up. It's going to take a tremendous political will to do that, but if you can't do it when there's no money, I mean, it seems like the perfect opportunity to hopefully educate our legislatures to get away from the partisan politics that are blocking us from making some significant changes.
Well, I would certainly be supportive of that, and if there's an opportunity for you to bring that before us, I would appreciate it.
Okay, and I'll definitely look for those and do that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
We have Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Riddlewald, one day when we have money again, I hope, one of the things that I'm interested in, and I don't know what it would take for you to look into, but making the some of the forms that we have in your office available online, such as political campaign contribution forms, personal statements, anything to continue to increase transparency and make things easier for the public to access. And I don't know, I know some counties do that, and
right.
I don't know if it would take a lot for you just to get a sense of how much that would cost.
There are programs that you can buy that certainly assist in doing that, and we haven't gone down that path just because of where we are financially with it. But the integrated document management system that the auditor was speaking about, when that gets implemented in our office, it may well give us an opportunity, because those are some of the documents that we would scan and maintain as images instead of as paper. That may well give us the opportunity to post those online as well as just have available in our office electronically.
So is there a chance that once that gets more integrated into your system, you'll have a sense of whether that's possible and how much it would cost?
Right, exactly. We'll have a sense of whether using that system gives us the ability to effectively maintain it on as a website type thing. One of the things that we run up against a little bit, and it's one reason why we don't have our official records, the actual documents on the web, is that we cannot post the home address of any elected officials. So we just say we're not posting anything, which when you get into the privacy issues, most people appreciate that their deeds or whatever are not available on the internet. Same kind of issue comes up, although most people who file the, whether it's the 460s, the campaign disclosure, or the 700s, are using their work addresses and not their home addresses. So those are some of the issues that we'd have to be aware of.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Mr. Freitas.
Chair Gibson, members of the board, Frank Freitas, County Treasurer, Tax Collector, and Public Administrator. First of all, I want to say that our department obviously doesn't have any at-issues items. My only concern is the freezing staff. If we've reduced a couple of positions, and with the freeze and the delays at filling these staffs, is going to create a problem for us. We're able to operate with the budget that we've asked for, and that's been recommended, but when we lose staff, we need to be able to replace them efficiently. That was one concern. The other thing that I wanted to say this morning is to thank the employees, the SLOSIA, all the employees in the county that have come forward and helped, try to help with the funding issues that we're having. I'm surprised. This is the first time that I remember this happening in the 36 or so years that I've been with the county, and I'm impressed that with Kim Daniels and her work and efforts in helping with this budget process. So I don't think that the employees of this county should go unrecognized for that, and I'm sure you are recognizing them. I just wanted to recognize them myself. But that's it. But I'm here to answer any questions that you might have regarding my department.
Any questions for Mr. Freitas? We're good.
I want to find out from Tom how I appeal my taxes.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been there, Frank. I've been before that board.
Well, you know, I do have one question, if I could.
Sure.
Mr. Freitas, and how has all of this foreclosure issues, all of these hard money loan things that we're hearing about, how has this affected our cash flow in terms of tax collecting?
And the last time I looked, which is at the end of the collection period, I think we were less than 1% down in collections from last year. A lot of the properties are getting sold in foreclosures, and then their taxes are paid. So from the standpoint, we're probably getting more in penalties and costs from delinquencies, and they're not lasting a long time. But, you know, this is a changing time, and it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen in the future. And as if Tom said, if you could predict the future, we wouldn't. None of us would be here. We'd be out again in Hawaii, somewhere else. But anyway, I'd be here in San Luis Obispo County because this is really the best place to be. But
okay, thank you. All right, thank you. Didn't know if the admin office wanted to weigh in on its own budget. I'll follow on behalf of the board if you all.
No, we don't have anything else to add.
Everything's good.
Good enough for now.
I guess you didn't say that, but
I do have one other question for Mr. Buckshy.
Sure.
We spoke a little bit about this, but I know that there is a payment in lieu of taxes that we receive for federal lands, BLM, things like that. And I think in your budget you had like 600 and some thousand that was applied to that. We are apparently going to get at least twice that, if not more. So how is that going to be applied in terms of the revenue?
Yeah, let me see if I can give you a general answer, and Andrea can jump in more detail. We budget for that in non-departmental revenue, which is the discretionary revenue, which provides the general fund support to different departments. That money's coming in the 08-09 fiscal year. Overall, we're anticipating to be about $2 million lower than budget in 08-09. We factored that into the fund balance available calculation that has been done at this point in time. So that essentially that increase has helped offset some other decreases in other funding sources, and it's been accounted for in terms of where we're at today. And
so just kind of wash. Okay, thank you.
I will add a little. We did actually receive the funding about a week ago, and you're right, it is more than double than what we had anticipated. We do have a number of revenue sources that are lagging. Even our estimates from January are continuing to lag, however, so it will be used as a leveling revenue source.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And as the last department in this functional area, turns out I'm the nominal department head, and my colleagues can speak to my ability to manage or not manage, but...
Did we evaluate it?
Yeah. I think a 360 basically happens every Tuesday. So that being the case, let me speak a little bit to the board supervisors' budget. We're a small department, and on behalf of the department, I put forward a proposed budget that looked at trimming some of our expenses, relatively minor amounts in terms of travel, some miscellaneous expenses like meal funds and things like that, and our memberships in at least one of the organizations. It's a little bit confusing in that some of these items actually reside in other fund centers, including the admin office, but they're basically things that the board pays a lot of attention to in terms of our membership, for instance, in the National Association of Counties. So a minor amount was trimmed there, and a somewhat more significant amount was trimmed in our community project funds. We proposed a 10% reduction to those amounts. That amounts to about, what did we decide, $13,000 or a little bit more in terms of the Fund Center 106. That actually gets discussed tomorrow, but again, something that the supervisors consider. As with many departments, I think even more particularly in our department, a huge fraction of our expenditure is on salaries. And salaries have certainly been a topic of considerable discussion over this budget cycle. And I appreciate Mr. Freitas bringing it up. I was going to as well. You know, we thank SLOSIA for leading the way in terms of coming to the table and talking about salaries and seeing what their members were willing to contribute to helping close that budget hole that we've been wrestling with, that we are wrestling with this week. The board has talked in general about our desire to do something similar. We started from the general concept of shared sacrifice and our desire to lead by example. So in the proposed budget, we actually, I put forward a nominal $1,000 a year reduction in the salary of supervisors. As many of you know, the Brown Act prevents us from having any discussion of a decision like this in private. So here we are in public, and what I'd like to do is suggest we take that a step farther. And in an effort to make a statement about our desire to see this county function and to control some of the costs, I'd like to propose a slight further reduction in supervisor salary, and it goes like this. The $1,000 a year on our salary of around $84,000 is a little over 1%. But in looking, one of the things SLOSIA did was to forego any prevailing wage increase. And we did that. Supervisors did that a few months ago when, as yearly we do, we considered our own salary. I think we backed off something 2.5% pay raise. I don't remember the exact number, but it was on that order. What I'd like to do is propose that if we take that raise that we refused and add more reduction to the tune of a total of 5% below where we would have been, I'd like to propose that as the salary for supervisors in fiscal year 9-10. That would mean, the math is rough, but that would mean something like an $1,800 or $1,900 per year reduction in supervisor salaries for 9-10. I think that is, as we sit today, not knowing what the state's exactly going to do, but I think that puts us out in a leadership position in terms of our own salaries, and I'd open it to the floor for that discussion. Mr. Shajan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this up for discussion. We'll talk about discretionary funds tomorrow, the 106, which I'm not all in concept with it yet because that's taxpayers' money going to the taxpayers. It doesn't come out of our own pocket, so I can't look at the SLOSIA and say, yeah, I brought my share to the table. But my suggestion is going to be, rather than going back and forth, we take a 5% from our existing income, which will mean what we didn't take last year is not part of the formula. So we're talking 5%, but my 5% is, as of today, what we make, we take a cut of 5%.
Any other comment, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also recommend that we take a look at our membership and other organizations we currently, and I don't know, I didn't see the final adjustment. One of the recommendations that I had made is that we consider our membership to RCRC, which is about $12,000 a year. That is, I believe, in our budget, whereas our membership in the CSAC, California State Association of Counties, is in the admin budget. And absolutely, I believe we should stay engaged in that organization. I know you're representing the Board of Supervisors on the board of CSAC, and I believe also RCRC, but whether or not we need to be members of both state organizations, I question. The other thing that I want to at least mention, that our legislative assistants, whose salary previously had been tied to ours, we disengaged them from that process this past year, and they're in one of the bargaining units, and that bargaining unit is still negotiating on what they want to do as a bargaining unit. There's about 300 members. My legislative assistant is willing to take VTO, which they haven't done yet because they haven't come to an agreement on what they want to do. But that's a potential savings as well. We could take voluntary time off, but that would prevent us from working as much as we need to work to serve the county, so it doesn't change much. I'm supportive of some cutback in our wages. What that is, you know, is up for discussion. I know that we have not taken the recommended salary increases based on our analysis of comparable counties. We're probably the lowest salaried supervisors of those comparable counties, and so we, I think, need to be aware of that. And if we get so far back when the economic times do turn around, we're going to find ourselves way below it, and adjustments would be quite huge to get us back up into parity with our comparable counties. So I don't want to take it too far back.
Okay. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am supportive of your proposal, and we'll discuss if we need to reduce our salary some more, mostly as an act of leadership. I also have concerns about RC membership, as Mr. Patterson does, and also about, in terms of the reductions, I know it's, the public loves to hear people cutting their salaries and never likes to hear, of course, increasing their salaries. And my only concern, as most of our decisions that we try to make here at the Board of Supervisors, I think, are also for the future. And I don't want us not only to get into a position where we're so far below what the prevailing wage is, because I really don't think it's a good idea to be increasing salaries at any time when we have economic problems, and that could be for the next few years. But we also don't want to be in a position where this job is only available to people of means. I think that that's a problem, too. I think the legislature is at that point where the only people who can run for legislature are people who have money. And it's very difficult. I think our colleagues on the city council really have to sacrifice a lot of time for what is supposedly just a part-time thing with very little pay. And I think, you know, if we reduce the Board of Supervisors' pay too low, you're only going to get people who can afford to have the job because they have a fair amount of income already or they're retired, and I think we want to be concerned about that too. We want this position to be, we want people to run for it from all walks of life in our community, and I think that's important too. We don't just want to segment it to the people who can afford to take the job. So that's my only concern, but I do support as a larger discussion of all the leaders in our county of what we might do, which is ultimately, you know, symbolic but important for us to share in the sacrifice, because this is a difficult time when we're seeing employees leave, and it's not something that any of us feel good about.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I too would concur with your proposal. But I, you know, just go back to the county officers and department salary schedule for all the elected officials for the appointed department heads. I would certainly hope that everybody else would take in consideration some type of a sacrifice as well. The one thing that has absolutely amazed me in some areas, and I'm not pointing fingers in any one specific direction, is a sense of entitlement in some respects. That needs to go away, because in this environment that we're in, this economy that we're in, we are all going to have to make shared sacrifices. So I certainly hope that others step up as well, and I'm willing to go along with your proposal.
Okay. But thank you. Let me speak in response, and I'll go take another round if we're interested in that. I think we do work this budget with one eye cast up toward Sacramento, because one or both of the other shoes are going to drop at some point, and we're going to be back inside this budget
probably dealing with some significant issues. But my feeling is, again, without getting unduly technical, is if we go with the reduction that makes it, again, consistent for going prevailing wage and going 5% below that, I think we've made a strong statement. We've made the strongest statement at this point of any employees in the organization, and I think that's where we should be. I think we may need to be reconsidering that later in the year if we have to, and I would be open to doing that. So I would stay with the. I heard support for the idea that I outlined, and I am comfortable. I think that's the right thing to do. Let me speak to our memberships. Well, let me speak also to our legislative assistants. My legislative assistant as well is willing to take what amounts to about 5% voluntary time off, and that's, as you can expect, a matter of agreeing to do that. And I think that we'll find that that we'll be able to get the job done with that accommodated. And I very much appreciate Ms. Ispero's agreement to do that. That's, again, a symbolic action in terms of the overall scope of the county budget. Let me speak to our memberships in outside organizations. It's very much my thought that part of my job, part of our job collectively, is to represent this county to the outside world. That's why we engage organizations such as CSAC, and I think CSAC is an absolutely necessary membership for us to have. Keeps us very much connected with Sacramento. Let me jump to the National Association of Counties. We joined that relatively recently, and I have been tracking the information that's come in. I think we all get that. I don't see as much direct impact on our lives through that national organization, and I think that's one we can comfortably forego. The Regional Council of Rural Counties, or RCRC, is the other statewide organization. And I, too, had my questions as to what it amounted to. Talked with Supervisor Obed at some length about his many years of representing us. But more importantly, I talked to our state lobbyist, Mr. Peterson, and some colleagues from other counties who do participate in RCRC. And it's my recommendation to you that we do remain in RCRC at least for another year. And the reason is that RCRC differs slightly from CSAC in that it does attend to the needs of smaller counties, first and foremost, but it also attends to issues at the state level in a little different way. You know, we're all familiar with legislation. Bills pass the legislature, the governor signs them. For instance, AB 885 on regulation of septic tanks. Very important, high-level concept. CSAC certainly involved in the legislative act of that bill. But the real work then becomes when the agencies, like State Water Board, make the rules as to how that's going to be implemented. And you've just seen in a recent cycle that those state agencies need the input from the local level. And RCRC is extremely adept. They have some very talented analysts with good contacts within the agencies that actually get down on the nuts and bolts of some of this higher-level legislation and are able to affect change so that it doesn't come and visit either us in terms of extra cost as a county or burdens to our constituents. Now, I'm still learning RCRC. There's a meeting this week, and I need to talk to Mr. Meacham about which one of us is going to cover that meeting, actually. But I think it's worthwhile for one more at least one more cycle to learn a little bit more about what it can do for us. The cost of $12,000, I look at that as a cost that we can spread over the entire county budget, and I think it has benefits to individual departments. It has benefits to our constituents. So at this point, I'm comfortable having it remain. Open for discussion. I'd like to go ahead. I'll pass it to Supervisor Hill, I guess. Are you up?
I think it's
Cacho. And then I'd like to come back and talk a little bit about the department heads and address the question that you raised at the end of your comments, Mr. Meacham. Mr. Shaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in agreement with Mr. Hill, when you say that this is not to be the job for only the wealthy and the retired, but on the other hand, we do make a living. It's not a bad dollar amount that we receive, and all of us, most of us, are here because not what we make, but it's the love of giving back to the community from an elected office. So I want to be sure that we have a balance there as why we're here for. I know that, as my colleagues speak, we're heading towards the formula put forward by our chairman, Gibson, and that's a quest about $1,800. My formula quest about $4,200. And I'm also trying to see those who completely lose their jobs as they're not going to make anything. And there is more of a giving from our behalf than otherwise. But I will, in instances like this, join my colleagues and be sure that our efforts move forward unanimously with one voice. I have no problem going that route. But from one supervisor speaking, I think the time is right for us to give up a little more than otherwise.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. I am interested in hearing again your proposal as to the salary reduction. Okay. And I think absolutely the bottom line for our department as a whole needs to meet the 5% cutback that we're asking all other departments, or I should say most other departments, to achieve. And I know we've just about cut everything we possibly can other than salaries, and we'll probably be asked to cut more next year. As far as RC is concerned, I was the alternate, and I think I actually still am. I'm not sure how that works out, but Supervisor Gibson's been attending those meetings, and it's mostly the northern rural counties of California, and their issues are very different than ours in most instances. Now, if Chairperson Gibson believes that we ought to invest another year, then, you know, I'll leave that on the table. I do read their weekly updates and track the legislation and their recommendations, and I don't know that a lot of the suggestions that, well, or a lot of the legislation that applies to those rural counties really apply to San Luis Obispo County. A lot of it's in relation to rural schools and funding and timber and that sort of things that really don't apply to us. But if you've talked with Mr. Peterson and he feels there is value in their legislative efforts that do affect San Luis Obispo County, then that's value that we need to track. So I would support that, but you know, with a cautious eye, I guess, sure. I might say, because sure. I don't want them advocating for legislation that doesn't affect our county or that our county might be opposed to.
Sure.
And, you know, that's important to me.
Sure.
I don't want to pay someone to oppose our best
work against
our
sure.
best interest.
Sure.
So I'd keep sure. an eye out to that. And again, what I've done as policy, and this is personal, that all cost of living increases that we've been given since I've been on the board, I've put in my community project funds because I feel that's an opportunity to actually support a lot of the local nonprofit organizations in my district. And so I'm essentially making what I've made when I was elected, and that's all right with me. But I do share Mr. Hill's concerns that we'll get to a point where the only people that can run for this position are the people that can afford to support themselves. This is what I describe as a lifestyle. It's not a job. If you're going to be committed to do the work, you need to be able to financially afford to do the work. And if we ratchet the salaries down too low, we won't get people that will make the commitment to this job that I think it deserves.
Mr. Meacham?
On the RC topic, which I am the alternate now, I've read over all of their information, and as we receive the packet each time, and it's pretty substantial, I've been impressed with the legislative analysts on all of the different propositions, and in regard to either advocating for or against, if we are engaged in this, then we'd be better able to make that judgment, I think. So I would support staying at least for another year to see how we fare with all of this. From the national standpoint, I haven't seen much, you know, from the NACO thing. I haven't seen anything there that really
that's an easy one to give up.
Important to us. I could give that up easily. CSAC, I think, is important for us, but I would recommend staying with the RCRC for another year.
Okay. And, you know, I would point out, I was trying to remember the most comparable counties to our own. Napa County is in there. In fact, it's the second vice president is Supervisor Dillon of Napa County. She's very, very, very high on the potential there. I agree. There are instances where there's some slight divergence in their advocacy with what we might. Largely, that does involve very rural counties that have considerable amounts of public land, national forest issues, fire suppression issues, but they start to verge back on ours. So we can certainly watch that. There is that divergence of opinion within CSAC, and we're seeing that played out a bit as we have watched CSAC wrestle with the budget. And in reference to your other question about the calculation of the salary, rough terms, I just did the math here. If the total salary reduction is about $1,850, I don't know, we could round it at $2,000 if we wanted to, but at around $1,850 per year off of our salary right now, that's about 2.25% below where we are right now. That's a salary cut of 2.25%. That where we land after that is about 5% down from where we would have been if we had taken our prevailing wage increase. Mr. Hill? The previous discussion, I'm okay, and I think that Supervisor Sazin says it's good to act in unanimity on the RCRC issue, on the NACO issue, on staying with CSAC, and on the reducing of our wages and if necessary, revisiting as needed. So I will support it. Your proposal
is a motion. Sounds pretty much like a motion there.
Okay, I moved your recommendations for the Board of Supervisors.
You know, we want to make it $2,000 even, so it's easier accounting.
Sure.
$2,000 even?
Sounds good.
$2,000 even. Okay.
Yeah, so I support that with the necessary adjustment from Supervisors to Sajin to move forward.
Okay. Very good. So we have a motion. We have a second. Would you like to include in your motion approval of the rest of the functional area as submitted?
I would.
All right. That sounds efficient. Mr. Ed, yes.
If I can, and Andrea may jump in here, just to get clarification on the motion that you're talking about reducing salaries by the difference of what was already forwent to 5%.
No, $2,000.
That's a little more than...
Okay.
So yeah. It's about two and a half, yeah.
And so just to clarify, there will actually be additional savings because of the variable benefits that are paid on the salaries of about 35%. So we'll factor that into the overall budget. And then does the motion include eliminating the NACO?
Yes. And that's within
that's
your...
That's already done.
That's within your budget. Is that admin's budget?
I need
budget?
To verify that.
Okay. And I don't know. We had suggested to admin that be the... So it might be part of the proposed budget.
I think that was already taken out.
I think we are. Yeah. So we do have a motion. We have a second. Madam Clerk is... Oh, she's shaking her finger at me. That's not a good sign.
Wait!
Okay.
I believe your salary is set by ordinance. So is really the direction for staff to prepare an ordinance?
No, I think it's just the reduction.
To reduce this, but you have to
this
reduce...
Year.
I believe the clerk is correct, but... Certainly, for budget purposes, you could approve this, and it would need to be implemented by an ordinance amendment.
Bring back the necessary ordinance amendment at an appropriate time. Thank you, Madam Clerk, as always, absolutely on top of it. I saw the auditor conferring down that end of the dais. Is there something more we need to know? Probably is, but... Yeah.
You mentioned in your original comments that you had reduced the budget by $1,000 per board member. Did I mishear you?
That was in the proposed budget was a reduction of $1,000.
Right. And so this will be in addition to the $1,000,
no,
or will it net with
another, the $1,000? Another $1,000 below that.
Got it.
Thank you for that detail.
And it's the
tentatively approve the remaining portion.
Yes, tentatively approve this functional area with the
supplemental
and the modifications to the Board of Supervisors budget as noted.
Yes.
And shall we do a roll call with
that? One last thing, if I may, and with the note that admin office has withdrawn the supplemental. You'd include that in your motion.
Right, and that was just the career series
functional.
Yeah. The career series issue on the one item.
Correct,
one
and we're just suggesting we wait to flesh
okay.
that out later.
Okay.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes, sir.
All I was going to add was, as a former member of the state legislature, RCRC was invaluable to me to give a perspective on things that many times CSAC didn't have. CSAC being sometimes dominated by metropolitan counties. It sounds like you're not going to.
We're keeping it.
That you're going to keep it, but I was just going to let you also know that it was quite invaluable for members of the legislature in counties such as ours, which are kind of in-betweeners, to at least have that perspective, because they do come at things at a much different angle, and it was quite invaluable.
Yes, they do. Very good. Thank you. Yes, we'll give it another year. So with that, gentlemen, Mr. Grant.
You were going to mention the department head.
Let's go ahead and clear this motion, and then I'll make a comment on the department heads. I appreciate that. So why don't we roll call this one, Madam Clerk?
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Meacham.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes. And I appreciate colleagues' unanimity on this. I think that's, as mentioned to seats to my right, that is a very important statement in and of itself. Let me speak to the department heads. I've been attending department heads meetings as the chair, and the department heads have been discussing a similar measure of show of solidarity, of shared sacrifice. And I wanted to let you know that over the course of the last couple months, that the appointed department heads have come together and voted unanimously to forego any prevailing wage increase that would occur during the 09-10 fiscal year. They come to that their general thinking on that was to be consistent with what SLOSIA and the other bargaining units. And again, there wasn't complete consistency within the bargaining units. SLOSIA clearly stepped up where others did not. But the department heads felt that at this point, in dealing with this budget, at this time, that their statement was consistent with SLOSIA's similar agreement to forego their prevailing wage increase. As we go further, we appreciate that. Let me express my appreciation to the appointed department heads for doing that. And as we go further into consideration of the consequences of whatever the state may choose to do, I'm sure that question will be back before those department heads for their consideration. So with that, thank you. Let me ask Mr. Buckshaw, in terms of the balance of what we have to consider this morning, are we halfway through, or should we go one more functional unit?
Wait. I anticipate we don't have that much more time to cover the remaining items. Support to county departments may take a while. Financing and capital projects, I think, would probably be pretty short.
All right. Well, why don't we take a 15-minute break? Then we'll reconvene 10:25. All right. Thank you, Madam Clerk.
we'll continue with the function area support to county departments. Mr. Buckshot.
Support to county departments, as you can see here, about $30 million in total expense, 6% of the total budget. There is a recommended decrease of 26.5 positions, or about 10% this functional area. Service level impacts, there are a number. I just hit a few of the high level. There is a loss of a deputy county council position, which may result in longer time for legal support. There will be a significant amount of reduced maintenance, both in ongoing custodial support and in terms of maintenance workers and general maintenance overall of facilities. As I noted in the overview, this is a shorter-term strategy in terms of scaling back maintenance. It's not something we want to do over the long haul, but it does help balance the budget in the near term, and there will be reduced IT support. There are a few positions eliminated there, so response to some IT requests and issues may take a little longer than they have in the past. And that concludes the overview.
All right, Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on fleet services, and I don't know if Dan's the best to answer this. I had an interest in how we decide to replace vehicles. I'm, you know, of the mind that I'd love to see us replace our vehicles, especially vehicles that can be replaced with hybrids or very low, you know, much more fuel-efficient models than perhaps as the time comes. And I don't know if that's a policy.
I think I'll defer that to our general service agency folks. Currently, there are mileage and number of years of service of vehicles that are in place for our standard replacement schedule.
Sure.
Types of vehicle. I'll defer to them to answer more specifically.
Thank you.
Good morning. Jeanette Pell, General Services Agency Director. We've just recently hired our new fleet manager. And as recently as last week, we were meeting with him to discuss putting together a pilot project to bring in hybrid vehicles and also looking at ways to reduce our expenses with fleet and looking at maybe keeping vehicles longer and those types of things. So he is actively working on that now.
Right. And I know that there's even been some proposals for, I guess there's establishing a car sharing service in San Luis, and I guess you'll look at that as well.
That's correct. In fact, we're going to take those, the proposal that's been presented to us, and then we're going to look at it as far as could the county be more efficient or effective and do a comparison and really build a business case for the board.
Thank you, Ms. Pell.
And following on, just on, if you want to stay and comment on any other of the many things that your agency does. But in terms of fleet, have we been tracking overall fuel efficiency, fuel consumption, miles traveled, all those things of the fleet?
yes, but I believe that we could do a better job. We're putting processes into place so that we audit our fuel usage monthly. We have not done an adequate job of comparing our bills with, you know, our actual usage. And we are putting processes into place to do that now.
And I would assume as part of our AB 32 efforts, our greenhouse gas reduction efforts, we're going to be looking at making everything the county does, but particularly our vehicle fleet, more efficient.
Correct.
On the table, I would assume.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes.
Patterson?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank Jeanette for the responsiveness of your many departments. IT, when I have an issue, I call over and they're right on top of it, and you've worked very well and your department members with our library issues. The architectural division has been very responsive, and then most recently your response to our opportunities for the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant. Katie Perez and her staff have been very responsive and helpful in helping us move those things forward, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you. Service to the county, that's what General Services does, and you're doing it well. So
thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions of Ms. Pell?
So I have a few comments, if you don't mind. Now that I'm here. So really what we're talking about now are budget units under my responsibility that support other county departments. And we know that in tight budget times, that's the area that the board will look at first. And we've tried to put measures into place. We've kept positions vacant, and we've engaged using VTO. And again, I want to thank my employees for doing that. We've very successfully, in both IT and general services, have been using VTO to help balance our budget. But again, these are just small measures that we have made. Unfortunately, we will see a decrease in FTEs of 23 positions. That's fairly significant for an internal service providing department. And so many of those are vacant, but we will impact 8 existing employees. So it's not insignificant. I have to say thank you to Jerry Seebach and Julie Rodewald for recognizing the technology that the county has put into place over the last few years. I joined San Luis Obispo County in 2003, and I am so pleased and proud of the way this county has brought in and invested in technology. And I believe that because we have done that, we're able to weather this storm right now because of the technology that we've implemented. So I want to just echo what Dan said. This has got to be temporary. We have to maintain our buildings. We have to maintain our infrastructure. We have to be bringing in new technology. We understand that today is not the day, but please don't have it go on too long where we lose all the, you know, incentives and efforts that we've already put into place. And with that, again, I want to thank my employees for, you know, especially SLOCIA and them taking a pay cut, in essence, the use of VTO. I want to thank the administrative office because this last year, as the agency has been formed, we've needed a lot of their support, and not only in preparing the budget, but in some of the day-to-day activities. So my thanks to Vince Marici and Dan Buckshy for really helping us. So thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you, Ms. Pelz, and also for the job that you do.
Since you have a larger or departments that have more employees, and what I heard from Mr. Seebach yesterday, that offering additional voluntarily time off might equate into a loss, not a gain. As I look forward to hear more from different department heads, would you please also look into that and that with our standing meetings, maybe bring that information forward, either publicly here, if my colleagues are interested, but I'm interested to know how would that impact us if we were to allow individual employees who are willing to take another day off, what would that equate to?
Yeah, I don't have the exact number, but I mean, it could say definitely with the different positions that we have in the agency, it could save, you know, a person.
If you're able to give it some time and maybe something in writing that we can refer to in the very near future, I would appreciate that information.
Yes, sir.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other department heads from this area that would like to comment? Seeing none, I will open it to the public. Don't have any requests to speak until now. Ms. Daniels?
Good morning, and for our position from SLOCIA's perspective, general services, the custodians are the group that are taking the most significant hit. I believe there are 6 positions that are slated for elimination. Our custodians are some of our lowest paid employees in the county. They also belong to the trades and crafts unit that voluntarily came to the table in the middle of a contract and agreed to do the redirect to try and save jobs. I would ask you to please, if you're looking at a place for the savings from health agency, to consider augmenting the general services budget to save at least some of those custodial positions from elimination in January. As I said, trades and crafts are the ones that stepped up, the only organization that stepped up in the middle of a contract when they were not required to do so. And custodians represent a significant number of the trades and crafts members, so I'd ask you to take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. No other requests to speak and no one coming forward. We'll close it to the public. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you. I don't know, Ms. Pell, if I should ask you this question.
The custodians that were addressed
by Ms. Daniels. I see that we're training a couple of new people, but if you want to let them off in January, why are we doing that? I think I saw two young men who have been training recently, and my understanding that they'll be taking over this building where we're accustomed to the two young, very productive young ladies with a smile on their face, and we're going to miss that. So if we are hiring and come January, we're going to lay some off. And I stand to be corrected if that's not the case.
So, Supervisor Sergeant, through the chair, we have not hired any new custodians for quite some time. What you're seeing now is some cross-training because we want to make sure that when at the end of the calendar year comes that we have, because we are going to lose several custodians, that we have people with the expertise and experience to keep our routes running smoothly. So there are no new hires. These are existing employees that are being shifted from, you know, days and nights and just for cross-training purposes.
And do we have a choice as who we would like to stay with our building? Do we don't?
In an effort to provide one excellent customer service, we're trying to make sure that all of our custodians give you the utmost customer care.
Well said.
You just saw the limits of power there, Supervisor.
On the top of taking a cut, that was...
Yeah, that's been a tough morning, I know. With that, we're back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion and a second that we...
Tentatively.
And assuming the information of the supplemental document.
Yes.
And there were no modifications. That being the case, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. And we will move on then to financing.
Okay. I think this section will hopefully prove to be a fairly boring section by relative standards. This is really where a lot
they're streaming from the room, Mr. Berkshire.
It works.
It's going to be that bad? I don't know.
This really represents where a lot of the financial information flows through. Some of the stuff, such as the debt service and other payments, are housed here. The non-departmental fund center is housed here. The main hit, as you can see here, as I noted in the overview, some of the depreciation that we would normally set aside for future replacement and repair of buildings and automation equipment is being redirected to the general fund to help close the gap on a short-term basis. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about this section.
Any questions for Mr. Buckshot? This looks to be largely a technical issue. Let me just ask in turn. When we say that the county has a $460 million budget, you know, some of those are actual expenditures, but some of that number does actually represent some of the transfers that we see going on here.
That is correct. It does include the interdepartment transfers. So if one department provides a service to another and charges that department and includes that, which actually has the impact of inflating the budget a bit because it's a double expense. You have the expense of the cost in the position in the department providing the service and then the corresponding expense. But that's how the State Budget Act tells us we are to do budgeting.
Matter of generally accepted accounting principles, I would.
Correct.
If I don't overstep my bounds in the use of that term. Mr. Shajian, question for Mr. Berkshire?
Not necessarily Mr. Berkshire, maybe Mr. Seabrook, with all the debt services and accumulating debt and maybe more coming our way, how does our bond hold up?
The bond rating. So far, so good. We actually are waiting for a new rating for our pension obligation bonds. We discussed with your board last week of refinancing. And Standard & Poor's and Fitch are studying what we have presented, and we'll know. We think we're still okay. Our debt ratio out of total expenditures is still very low for a county our size. Right now we're in pretty good shape, except being part of California. that's just it. I mean, they look at a county in Texas or Connecticut or just about anywhere else as inherently stronger than having us located in California, where the state is known to be in such dire straits that they will be picking our pockets and pushing costs down again to counties. So that's the sword hanging over our head financially, and they know about it. We can't hide that. But I do have a booklet that I was going to send to each of you that is what we used for our presentation to the bond companies, and it might be interesting for you. It gives a lot of good information. It's done with a little bit of a spin, though, that we're trying to present us in the strongest light. So we're not telling any fibs, but we're not
telling
emphasizing the negatives. We're emphasizing the positives.
Are you telling the whole truth?
Like we're not from California?
Are you suggesting we cede from the state?
The what? Oh, yeah. If we could, at one time, some people were talking about Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara would be our own little state. Remember when there was the North and the South? And here, people locally were saying, no, we don't want to be with either of those. Let's go on our own.
Well, if the San Andreas Fault goes off, we might be,
be there.
Another country floating out
My
there.
My mother was all excited about it, who thought her boy was a great guy. You know how that is. She said, and you could be the state controller.
All right, but getting back to the business. Mr. Hill.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a question for Mr. Seebach, probably Mr. Buckshy. On Fund Center 268, the tax reduction services related to Diablo Canyon power plant, I understand that, you know, and I'm glad that admin is putting money aside because of the depreciation of the plant is leading to lower property taxes. But I guess here's my question. At the same time that we're realizing less property taxes because the plant is aging, we are also now, of course, very, right now, literally, as we speak, loading spent waste into the dry casks. So we're actually, while the plant's aging, we are taking on very hazardous waste that is unlikely to ever leave our county. And I wonder if there's any way for that to be reflected or if there's anything to do on that part. Because I think, you know, not to politicize the issue one way or another, but it seems the plant's aging, but... And so we're realizing less property taxes that I know have been essential to our county, our school districts, et cetera, but we are storing this waste in our county for a very long time.
Well, I think... well,
so perhaps this is...
Ms. McGarvey here from my staff knows about as much about PG&A taxation as anyone in the state, except for Warren. So maybe she could comment on that. You want to say anything? Oh, come on.
No. this particular issue for Diablo Canyon is not one that, from everything that's out there, will be the license on the plants will be renewed in 2021, 2023. They're working on that, and there won't be the continuing power issues in California. They look on Diablo as very favorable. I don't know of any potential legislation out there that's going to affect Diablo Canyon or their revenue stream to the county. Every time they do like these generator replacement projects, every time they do one of those, the value goes up and the property taxes go up. The difference is the way that unitary property tax is distributed, and I won't get into that, but it's very technical. And so we don't see 100% of that growth in our county. But they are building improvements. PG&E is building improvements statewide, which impacts the county's unitary, our county's unitary taxes as well in a positive way.
The simple answer is the depreciation continues to roll down the total value, but as they do things like replace the generators and the dry cask storage, that serves to boost it up a little bit. So it isn't reducing quite as much. We also do get some proportion of the increases from just power lines and things in other counties, we get a percentage. Because it's a unitary, that means statewide. The Board of Equalization values it, not the county assessor. It is a very complicated thing, but there is some increase that comes from the investments they have been making, but they're not enough to offset the continual decline. If they relicense it out for another, how many years are they asking for, another 10 years?
20, 25, yeah.
That could help us in terms of the depreciation might not be as much per year. It might flatten out some.
So it would basically, it would require state legislation for the actual storage of nuclear waste in our county to be somehow reflected in perhaps better...
You mean like the risk of having this nasty stuff on site and all
Well,
that?
Certainly I think our residents have a sincere interest in that.
Our emergency services folks have been getting money every year for disaster planning and all that, and that could be probably, maybe Jim would want to say, but that might be the way to go at it for boosting that funding a little bit.
Well, simply the value of having a waste storage facility when there's no national waste storage facility. I think we could argue that it's extremely valuable function that they have there, considering the options that they would have.
Yeah, in my district, they're creating a nuclear waste storage facility.
Effectively permanent nuclear waste storage facility that
they're not paying property taxes on, I guess.
Well, or, you could argue as to what's the value of that facility. That would be the assessor or the appraisal question. Anyone else want to weigh in on that or any other technical items? I don't have any requests to speak. I'll open it to the public and close it to the public, bring it back to the board for action.
What was that recommendation?
We have Supervisor Shadjan and Patterson. No further discussion. All those in favor, aye.
Aye. That was a tentative motion.
Tentative motion with the supplemental documents, etc. And none opposed, for the record. And it looks like we have one more area, which would be capital projects and maintenance projects, the green pages.
Okay, as you can see here, as we've already discussed, very small amount of money being spent on capital projects, about $1 million is recommended total. None of it is from the general fund. By way of comparison, you know, in average years, anywhere from $7 to $10 million spent on capital projects. Some years it's considerably more if we happen to have a big project. As also as already noted, no additional funding for maintenance projects. General services will focus on the existing backlog of projects. You can see at the bottom here the couple projects that are recommended. About $700,000 for the expansion of a water line at the Operations Center out at Kansas Avenue. This has been a project that has been worked on in phases for a number of years. I believe this is the final segment. And it's also critical to do with the planned expansion of the women's jail and the juvenile hall. The water line needs to be expanded to increase the flow rate for fire service or for any fire issues that may arise out there. Additionally, $130,000 recommended to augment an animal services project to help renovate that facility as part of the follow-on from all the work that's been done on animal services per the recommendations of the Humane Society. And then there are a couple other smaller projects that are less significant. You know, we can answer any questions you have. I do want to thank General Services and Vince Marici from the admin office. He's our point person on capital projects, and they can help answer any detailed questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Buckshire or other staff? Ms. Patterson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this item, on capital and maintenance projects, I certainly have no objection to what's being recommended this morning. But on a larger issue, a couple of years ago, we developed a capital improvement plan, a five-year plan, where we were anticipating over that 5 years to spend about $30 million, roughly $5 to $6 million a year for the next 5 years, and we're in the middle of that now. And the recommendation this year is to spend about $1 million. And with the fiscal situation being what it is, I wonder if it wouldn't be appropriate for this board to take a look at that five-year capital plan and see how we might want to reshuffle the deck, if you will, to put it in more realistic grasp of what we're able to afford, because again, it's all out of sync now, or will be if we adopt what's recommended before us, and I think it would be appropriate to take another look at it, anticipating our inability to be able to spend $5 million for the next couple of years on capital improvements. We might want to reprioritize those projects.
Sounds a reasonable thing to me, Mr. Berkshire.
Yeah, and that is something that has been in the past a topic for some of the Board of Supervisors strategic planning sessions, and we can certainly plan possibly one for the fall in October when we do the overall financial update. We could incorporate a fresh look at the five-year capital plan as well.
Okay, very good. Well, certainly, as we rapidly approach the middle of the calendar year, sort of surprising, but there it is, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to consider that as well as start blocking out the generalities of our strategic planning for the fall, because I think that on the whole it's been a very positive thing for our ability to budget. Get earlier engagement both by the board and by the department heads. I think that thinking ahead has paid us some dividends. Seeing no other questions to staff, I'll open it to the public. I have no requests to speak. So I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board for action.
Move staff's recommendation tentatively.
Okay, we have a tentative motion and a second by Mr. Meacham. All those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, none. And that completes that. I understand that the planning department is ready with their alternatives proposal regarding code enforcement and building inspectors, and so trailing the formal consideration of this part of the budget, let's pick that up. I do have two requests to speak for items that were considered yesterday, and so after we discuss the planning issues, I will open it to the public on this one item. So with that, Mr. Buckshire, are you...
I will provide a very brief overview and then hand it over to Ms. Griffin to walk through in more detail. So per your board's direction yesterday, you requested a few options be brought back, ranging from about half of what was requested in the ad issue, which equates to around $350,000 in round figures, to an option that does not have any incremental cost. And there are two versions in between, so there are four total versions for your board. What Ms. Griffin is handing out is a summary. This is too small to put up on the overhead, so we do have slides for each of the four options that you have before you in the handout. And with that, I'll hand it over.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, County Griffin, County Planning. Yesterday you did send the department away and asked us to come back with a number of options that look at a balance between building and code enforcement. And I did want to preface all of these comments by saying that even the recommended budget would have service impact. So I want to start with that as a starting point. So if, in fact, the code enforcement program were modified such that we only had one specialized code enforcement officer, and building inspectors and planners would take on those additional duties, that obviously would have a service impact to their ongoing duties. We're just not sure the level of that impact, since it would be taking on a brand new role as building inspectors and planners. So starting from that as a starting point, this first option is about half of the total that was originally requested at the ad issue. There's a net increase of 2.5 positions. In this option, the computer support would be restored at 3/4 time. You would restore 4 of the 5 resource protection specialists. Those are our code enforcement 2s at 3/4 time. One of the code enforcement specialist 3s would change from full time to 3/4 time, and one would be eliminated. You would also reduce 4 of the full-time permit technicians in the department to 3/4 time. This gets you to about that halfway point between the at-issue cost and zero. The impacts to that are fairly minor. There'll be minor delays in the web page updates and computer support for the department. We would need to have some minor augmentation by building inspectors to help out code enforcement because they will be down a position. So there'll probably be an increase in code enforcement case resolution, but it's a small increase. Next day inspection service would be unaffected, but there would be perhaps minor delays in building permit processing as we're losing a portion of our permit technicians who work at the front counter at the permit center. So the next option is an option that was discussed by Supervisor Gibson yesterday. The total here would be about $255,000. It would be a net increase of two FTEs. In this option, it's virtually the same as the last option with a change of the reduction of six full-time building inspectors to three-quarter time instead of the permit technicians. In this case, the impacts would be much the same, but because you're looking at reducing inspection staff, we would no longer be able to guarantee next-day inspection. And also because you're reducing inspection staff, we probably wouldn't augment code enforcement with inspection staff to a great amount. In addition, because of that, you would see case resolution for code enforcement cases increase again by another 15 days. The next option is as close as we could get to our $100,000 option, which ended up only being about $95,000 total. There would be a net increase of 0.25 FTEs. This would restore the computer support at three-quarter time. It would restore three of the five code enforcement at three-quarter time. It would reduce both building inspectors to three-quarter time and permit technicians to three-quarter time. So although there's not a change in our computer support, so there'd still be minor delays in web page updates, nothing significant, you would need to see some augmentation by the building inspectors to code enforcement. And because you're reducing the building inspector's time, we couldn't do next day inspection service because the inspectors would be limited to 4 days a week. They'd be working 4 days a week and assisting code enforcement. In addition, code enforcement case resolution would increase by about 2 months over what it is today. Again, it's eliminating two filled code enforcement positions. The next option is option four, and this is our zero option. It actually is a decrease of 0.50 FTE, so half of an FTE. This restores ADAS 3 computer support at three-quarter time, but it also takes the existing computer support, our full-time DAS 3, and reduces it to three-quarter time, takes a three-quarter time computer support that was in our technical budget at three-quarter time, takes that down to half-time. What that means is that computer person would be fully committed to the homeless database, which we figured was about a half-time position, and is actually being offset at half-time by stimulus funds. It would, again, restore three of the five code enforcement positions. It would also continue to reduce building inspecting staff as well as permit technicians. It would also take a full-time senior planner to three-quarter time, and there would be a small increase to voluntary time off. In this option, you're going to see significant delays in web page updates. There will, again, be required to be some augmentation done by building inspecting staff to code enforcement. The key here is because we've increased the VTO, the voluntary time off, in order to try and achieve coverage for the department with additional requirements for voluntary time off, we may look to reducing hours at the permit center, for perhaps being closed at lunchtime, are actually saying that there's just limited services available in certain times. The reduction of the senior planner to three-quarter time would result in minor delays of environmental review. So obviously, this option has the most significant number of impacts to services for the department. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Questions for Ms. Griffin? One question I had, when you say increasing general fund support in your table here, 9% total, that's the increase of general fund support from
0809.
From 0809 to what the total would be.
Yeah, and the current and the proposed budget is a 5% increase.
5%. Mm-hmm. All right.
So to clarify that further, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Sure.
So it's additional 4% on the top of the 5 or additional 9% on top of the 5?
Additional 4% on top of the 5.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, you reaching for a light there?
Yeah, I was. Mr. Chair, I, in taking a look at the planning and buildings budget in total and the significant reductions that have been made, as you pointed out yesterday in the hearings, the recommendation to reduce staffing by 26 individuals is about a 23% reduction in staffing of the department, and I have significant concerns about the impact to the department's ability to address the public, the building community, the board and our efforts to move forward with planning. Now, what's been recommended today really addresses customer service to the building community as well as the public at large in addressing land use code violations and health and safety issues. And when we anticipate really an increase in the future of the development and rebuilding the building department's technical staff, the building inspectors, I think we need to take, a serious look at our ability to do that. And from everything we've heard, at least most experts feel that we're at the bottom or nearing the bottom of the impact to the building industry. And one of the things in dealing with the building industry, which Supervisor Hill and I have been doing over the past several months, one of the things they talk to us most about is their ability to turn things around so they can get things built. And quite frankly, what I'm supportive of is option one, where we maintain a level of service that I think is responsive to the public and responsive to the industry. We're talking about an additional $320,000 added to the Planning and Building Department's budget. I would recommend that comes from our contingency, which is roughly $14.7 million or 4%. That equates to about a 2% reduction in our contingency. And I think we could weather that. And I would be willing to endorse that option one, just to maintain a level of service. They've already taken a hit of 23% with staffing, and larger than any other department. We talk about public safety. They reduced their staff by a similar number, 30, but they have 735 positions, which is about a 4% reduction. Planning had 114 to start with, 14 of which were vacant to begin with, and we're talking roughly another 9 or so on top of that would be reduced. So I just wanted to put that out there. All of the division managers have agreed to take maximum VTO. Their staff has stepped up to help keep the department as whole as they possibly can, and I think it's our responsibility to step up and support that that effort. So I'm supportive of option one, and I just wanted to put those things out there for discussion among my colleagues.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm struggling with is I appreciate the importance of the positions that that planning has brought forward at issue and that my colleagues have made a case for, and it's probably easier for me on some of these code enforcement issues with less unincorporated area to perhaps appreciate the importance of it. I guess the thing that I'm struggling still is that their positions and part of our larger goal in dealing with our very serious financial situation is the actual downsizing of our organization over the, you know, which has begun before I joined this board, is continuing now that I'm on the board and is looking at the same process for the next few years. And so when we restore positions, that, to my mind at least, unless I can be convinced otherwise, it's not like one-time money where you're saying, well, let's see if we can spend this money to help us through this year. It's positions that are ongoing and the benefits and the pensions that are part of that. And it doesn't necessarily get us to where, and I'm willing to be convinced, but it doesn't get us to where we're supposed to be going, which is actually, you know, and it's not pleasant to say it, but it's actually having an organization that has fewer employees. That's sort of the end goal of, you know, of where we're supposed to be in a few years. And that's, I guess that's still the sticking point for me.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anything we do here today is for this year only, regardless of how many people we put in place or take out of the place. Every year has its own budget challenges. So whatever we do, I'm looking at it that it's for this year, and next year is next year. Ms. Griffin, can I go over option one and two with you and to clarify for me some of the differences in between? If we go to the proposal details, down between one and two, the only difference is the bottom reduction for four full-timers or reduction of six-timers. That's clear to understand. Can you go on back up to option one and option two, the second column there? It says minor augmentation by building inspectors to code enforcement, and on option two it says no augmentation. Can you be more specific, please?
Sure. In option one, the reduction of staff is permit technician staff, so there's no proposed reduction in building inspection staff. So in option one, we did feel that we would be able to do some augmentation of the code enforcement staff with building inspectors, as they will remain full-time. In option two, the trade-off is the permit technicians remain full-time, and the building inspecting staff goes to three-quarter time, six of them. And in that option, we felt that we probably would not be able to augment code enforcement in the same way that we would be able to if those positions stayed full-time.
Any chance, not just for the reasons that were challenged here today with the budget, that this can, as time goes on, be cross-trained, so there's always that flexibility between the two?
Absolutely. Currently, if a code enforcement officer goes out onto a site and determines that there's, let's say, substandard building, they'll most oftentimes call in the inspection staff to help with the specifics of what that entails. They might see wires hanging down and know that that's not right, but an inspector will come in and say, you know, here are the corrective measures that are necessary to deal with those wires that are hanging down, for example.
Under option one, when you say minor delays in building permit processing, aren't we obligated by state law to process or accept it into the process within certain days?
No, that's on the land use side. There is a law that exists that requires that things be processed within a certain amount of time. Building code does require that from the time an application comes in the door until the time it's issued, there's a limited time period on that. But the county's inaction wouldn't count against that time if for some reason it's slower.
But when you say minor delays, talking about a week, a
month or depends on the project? Or
it depends probably on the project, but probably closer to the week than the month.
Okay. And then when we say the difference between next day and no guarantee, next day inspection, you give me a scenario, please?
Again, in option one, we're not affecting the building inspection staff. They're remaining at full time, so we would continue to offer the same service that we offer right now with the building inspection, which is the next day service. In option two, it's the building inspection staff that the time is cut. So we're not certain if that means that we would not be able to do next day inspection, but we wouldn't guarantee it anymore like we try to now.
Now, if I take all that, and those are the service areas that I strongly support, if the money wasn't an object here, if you take all that into what the market is today, where is the balance, if I may put it that way? In other words, we need all these people if the business was as usual, but if that business is taken away because of the economy, no fault to your department, what is the justification? What is your experience as it is today?
Well, what we're finding, especially with the decrease in staff that we already have taken, and maybe I can help with Supervisor Hill with an argument there, department staff is already down by 16%. And as of the end of this month, when the retirements become effective, we'll see a further decrease. And so what we're finding is that we have about the right number of people right now to handle the workload that exists, in addition to the increased workload that some of the state mandates have generated. For instance, these post-construction inspections that are required by NPDES, something we've never done in the past, now is being added to our plate. So there is enough work for the current inspection staff as reduced. It's full-time is a 12, there's 12 FTEs assigned. Right now there will only be 8 FTEs assigned.
So in other words, the cuts you have already absorbed is justified for the market that we have.
We feel it right-sized
right,
the department.
And any further reduction is reduction in the services for the businesses that exist as we speak.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you. First of all, I have to agree with my colleague, Mr. Hill, in regard to our end game. And when Mr. Edge briefed us over the last several months on things, the emphasis was on how do we slowly reduce the level of staffing. And I know that this is going to be a direct reflection on service. And I don't anticipate and I don't expect people to be doing more with less people. That's to make that understood clearly. And with all respect to my colleague, Mr. Patterson, I don't know where you read that we are at the bottom, but I have not seen that anywhere, and I don't anticipate a turnaround on this for, I'm hoping, 3 years. It's just not in the cards. So I'm having a real difficult time adding anything at all at this particular point, and that's why I support it. If it could come back with a zero increase to the general fund, I could support this. But by adding people, it kind of goes against what our initial strategy is. And with respect to my colleague, Mr. Asajian, this is this year and not next year. I think we need to be thinking about next year. We're going to be back here with the same discussion again, and we're going to have to go through some more hard choices. And it'll just make it all that more difficult by putting people on, adding people, and then going back in another year trying to find a way to minimize that staffing level at that point in time. So I understand the aspect of this is our budget this year, but I think we need to be looking at the end game as well.
Let me ask, Mr. Shajan wants to respond to that. I have a response myself. Go ahead.
I understand exactly what you're talking about. What I meant that what we have in front of this year, next year can be worse and we have to deal with it, or can be better, we have to deal with it. We're in an unfortunate position not to be able to look 3 years, 5 years from now, because we're so dependent on how state deals with us, as how we how does our ATM machine perform. But what I'm coming from is that even though I expect next year not to be any better,
and I don't mean to be disappointing anyone that didn't know or at least expect the same through the 2010. But if the already cut positions is addressing the economy today, to me, I don't think we're adding more staff. We're just saying the blanks that we need to fill in to address what we have here today. If Department of Planning was in front of us today, have no vacancies, have done no cuts, and yet want to increase more, and I can see that we're getting into a bigger government, which I'm not going to support. But that's why my questions to Ms. Griffin to see where the justification is, and if my understanding is clear. And I'm neither at a zero nor at an option one. I'm just trying to hear more of justifications as where we go with what's presented in front of us.
And let me, if I could, Supervisor Patterson has light on, let me, if I could, take off on that. You've spoken to the proper sizing of the building inspector side relative to the market, but now we're contemplating the wholesale elimination of code enforcement, which is a function that I don't think this department can afford to give up. That's an ongoing thing, and I think that the cut went too deep. Speaking to Mr. Hill and Mr. Meacham, the department, as you heard from Ms. Griffin, is taking a significant reduction in staffing, and I think we have to look at what their functions are. So if we have the right number of building inspectors for the market, the building market at this point, and we take away all of code enforcement and ask the building inspectors to fill in that side of it, I don't think that works. I don't think that gives our other customers, namely the residents of this county, appropriate service. I think the other thing is we look at how we might finance this in the wider scheme of things. We set out a number of principles by which we were going to decide how many dollars did we have to fund these things. And thanks to the action of SLOCIA stepping up and combining that with, let me just use the example of the way the health agency budgets ahead of time before knowing they were going to do that, we actually can free up resources that could very easily cover option one. And we are still, on the whole, on the net, providing less resources to county government than our principals suggested that we should. So, I mean, I look at option one. You know, somewhere between, I guess, option one and option two is where I land. And, you know, I don't know whether we want to get down to the micromanagement of a couple quarter-time positions here or there. But in terms of the bigger picture, I'm looking at the top line here in terms of your web response, and we have minor impacts, and then we have significant impacts. And I wonder if there's some place in between where we can land, where we've spread the impacts a little more fairly, because that's one question. Before you get to that one, though, you talked about the right sizing of the inspection side of your operation. What would you consider to be the right sizing of your code enforcement, you know, given the financial constraints rather than the market at this point?
Well, I'll answer the first question first because it might be a little easier.
Yeah.
Probably something in between option two and three would be to not reduce the existing computer support that's budgeted from full-time to three-quarter time, and there's a cost associated with that, but that would leave probably an adequate amount of DAS support for the department.
You're saying somewhere around option, is that option four or?
It's...
'cause we had talked about, I had thought what we're seeing over in option four was something that you had considered appropriate possibilities within the department.
Actually, option four cuts even deeper than that.
Okay.
It takes the computer support for the department really down to about 1.5, which is about half the FTEs we have assigned to that right now. Somewhere a little higher than option three would be to leave to take the one DAS one that's in the technical corrections that's primarily focused on the homeless database from a three-quarter to a half, and there's a little bit of savings there. As to the right sizing for code enforcement, that's a really tough question, because I think there will probably always be enough code enforcement cases to go around. And it really depends on how quick you want the response to be and what kind of response you would like. So that is a really tough question. Right now, there are about, at any one time, there are between 500 and 800 active enforcement cases. We see probably 1,000 a year total. So that's spread over currently 7 people. In the first 2 options, it would be spread over 6 people.
Well, and but a number of those at 3-quarter time.
Right, that's correct. So
further lowering
reducing.
That, more like 4.5 or 5 people.
Right.
Okay. Let me go to Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to respond to both Supervisor Hill's and Supervisor Meacham comments about getting the county down to the right size in terms of our county workforce. And we have reduced that position allocation allowance, or FTEs, I believe in the vicinity of 56 last year. We're talking about another 130 or so this year. So in the course of the last 2 budget years, we're talking about close to 200 staffing reduction. And my concern with planning and building and what's been recommended is that we're putting too much on the backs of one department. As I mentioned earlier, we're talking about roughly, they already have 4 vacant positions which have impacted services to some degree. Excuse me, I said 414. And we're talking about adding another anywhere from 8 to 12, depending on which option we choose. A 23% reduction in staffing in one department. And it does significantly impact service. I think, as a county, we're downsizing at a reasonable rate so people have an opportunity to adjust. Yes, we'll have to continue to do that. SLOSIA has helped us make that adjustment by taking voluntary time off and agreeing to defer their COLA increases for this year, giving us positions to work with and revenue to work with. And when I take a look at option one and option two, the things that concern me about the differences between those is that with option one, we're talking about increasing code enforcement resolution by 30 days already, just in exercising option one. We go to option two, and we're talking about another 15 days. We're expanding it to 45-day resolution. That isn't good customer service. The difference between one and two in terms of building permit inspections, we can no longer guarantee next-day inspection, which is often critical to the building industry and their scheduling and timing. So I think, and I concur with Supervisor Gibson, I think the cuts are just a little too deep by eliminating the code enforcement staff. I think the recommendation for option one that planning and building is suggesting, we're talking about adding $320,000 to their budget. I suggest taking it out of contingency, $4.7 million, 4% that we have, 14.7 million dollars. It's a 2% reduction in contingency. I don't necessarily favor taking it from that 1.4 million we found in the health agency, because it's my feeling that that was money that was found within that organization, and it's due mostly to staffing concessions made by SLOSIA, that it ought to stay there, and we ought to use it for those programs. But I think contributing another $320,000 as recommended in option one for planning and building to keep our web page as current as we possibly can. It's important to people in the county, particularly our community advisory council, and keeping code enforcement at a reasonable level and our building inspections at a reasonable level. It's a small investment to make when we've already eliminated that department by about 18 positions. So they've taken a big hit. So with that, I'm going to move that we adopt option one as presented to us this afternoon.
Second. I would go ahead and open it to the public here in a minute, but I have a supervisor, Sajan. Would you like to speak to the motion here?
Mr. Chair, with your permission, rather than speaking to the motion, I do have a question for Ms. Griffin, if I may do that.
Sure.
And Ms. Griffin, I know it's not a comfortable place to be for you, but allow me to ask this question. If I go to option one and option three, if you go all the way down to your presentation here, am I misreading this, that under option two, I don't see anything about the technicians?
That's correct.
And
so
the reason
option
for
one
that?
Takes the technicians to three-quarter time. Option two takes inspection to three-quarter time.
So that's how you're...
It's difficult.
You don't have a preference as which one is better fitted into your organization?
There's really just a difference in service provision. When you take the inspectors down to three-quarter time, you will affect inspections with the permit technician staff at three-quarter time. What you'll affect is our ability to serve at the permit center, and we'll have to ask our plans examiners, our plan checkers, to come forward and backfill for permit technicians.
Yeah, just trying to absorb what you just said, but why don't we go to the public while
okay.
I'm understanding.
Okay, well, we ponder that. We have one request to speak and possibly a second one, Ms. Daniels.
Thank you. Good morning again. On behalf of the Planning Department, this is the department I've referenced it in the past at yesterday's hearing as well as at other times speaking publicly. The Planning Department is the one department that links arms and says we are family and from the top down maximize the use of voluntary time off. I have absolutely no doubt if the ability to increase the amount of voluntary time off is increased, then they will maximize that usage and result in further savings within their department. They also have, they were very, very good and very adept at managing the voluntary time off so that there wasn't an impact in services. They still have that ability. They have, over the last several years when the building industry was in boom fashion, generated revenue that went to the general fund. And that was utilized by a number of departments that have their budgets augmented, and additional general fund support was given because they were able to meet 100% of their budget and still contribute. I think that the difference between option one and option two is only $65,000, and you're talking about significant impacts to service levels for that $65,000. They are a department that has, over the last several months, not backfilled positions that are operating on rather a shoestring right now with just enough filled positions to provide adequate service. Further cuts decimates the department. And what you lose in that also as the industry starts to rebound back is the ability to have adequately trained staff to step in and do the job. If we can solve part of this with additional VTO, and I have no doubt this department will be the one that does it, why can't we explore that? Give them the funding suggested in option one. We can come back and revisit it later if it has to be. But I do believe there are things that can still be done and that the department will do to, if they are allowed to exist under option one, that will provide adequate service to the public and still be available as the industry starts to recover and provide all of the services that the county wants in building inspection and in code enforcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Daniels. Mr. Greening?
I'm Eric Greening, and I agree with the previous speaker, and I agree with the motion that's on the floor for many of the reasons she gave. The organization is downsizing, regardless of what action you take today, and it does need to retain the flexibility to deal with changing circumstances, which could be positive or negative. I suspect that Mr. Meacham is right that we're not going to see the bottom as soon as some people hope. But we also are a very special place, and our bottoms may look different from the statewide or national and global bottom. But on top of that, I want to be... I do have one question for Ms. Griffin, which is, what would be the impact of Option 1 or Option 2 relative to maintaining the current level of service to local advisory committees? And then I think the most important nuance in the motion as made and presented is that the money comes from contingencies and not from the money that should... essentially, the health department should have the first right of refusal on, because I think there are huge needs in the public safety department known as health, just as there are in the public safety department known as planning and building. And so if it should turn out that there are not three votes for option one, but there might be three votes for option two, I would hope that whoever would make the motion on option two would also draw that from contingencies and not from the money that has plenty of needed uses in the health department. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. No other requests to speak. We'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Ms. Griffin, you want to respond quickly on or briefly on Mr.
Yes,
Greening?
To respond to Mr. Greening, in either option, the CAC support would not be affected. We would continue to act as liaisons.
Thank you.
I did have maybe a clarification for Supervisor Ashajian relative to the difference between option one and option two. And the key there is that when you reduce building inspection staff, there's really no one besides a building inspector who can backfill for a building inspector. I can't go out and do building inspection. I'm not a trained building inspector. However, our plans examiners, our plan checkers who work at the permit center, could fill in for the permit technicians if they're reduced in time. So, for instance, if they work the permit technicians 4 days a week, you have a day a week at the front counter permit center that needs to be backfilled, we could ask the plans examiners to backfill for the permit technicians. So that's really the key difference between those two options. And that's why you see a difference in the service levels.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to speak in support of the motion, obviously, since I didn't second it just for discussion, but it's I think it's an important one. You know, first I'd observe that it's less than half of the at-issue amount that was brought forward, and I appreciate Ms. Griffin and Ms. Journey and all the rest of her department, along with admin, who have worked to try to craft something that does save a considerable amount of money over that. If you look around the county, the biggest issue we have really is the decline of the economy, and the most obvious way that is reflected is in the decline in real estate values and thus the decline in building activity. And, you know, it had been a nice run for a while. You know, we'd had 5, 6, 7, maybe as many as 10 years of great growth there, and you know, a lot of revenue being generated for this department. This department has been devastated by the drying up of the revenues that they are able to charge to support the building industry. And it is in this year, I believe, that they do need a hand in the form of increased. Support from the general fund. And as you look at it, I think this is just the kind of results-based budgeting discussion that we should have, that we look down and we see what is going to happen if we fail to do this. If you look at option one, it does keep enough people there to adequately, and I think more than adequately, I think it keeps people there to give excellent service to our building industry as they struggle to get back on their feet. But we cannot ignore the needs of other residents, the rest of the residents of this county, who certainly depend on code enforcement for not just health and safety inspections, but also significant environmental issues that we need to be on top of. And with all the added load that's coming with regulation that's being brought down from the feds and the state, I think we just can't afford to shrink planning as much as we originally had thought. So I would look also that there are ways in which savings might be gathered through the planning department as we go into the fiscal year to offset some of this. One of them would be the increased use of ETO, and I would encourage the department to make every exploration of that. But also we have the director's position open for a number of months yet, and so there will be a certain level of savings that will accrue through that. So for a wide variety of reasons, and Mr. Patterson's observation that this is, I think, an appropriate amount and use of contingencies as budgeted, I'm fully in support of option one. Mr. Shajian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. An observation of what you said, and if I may go back to Ms. Griffin for another question. Yes, it's a department that, given the most as far as staffing, but it's also a department that cost us the most because through the year we kept pumping in millions of dollars to keep the doors open. So it's a difficult decision to make. But the question to Ms. Griffin is between option one and two, you have a code enforcement case resolution increased by 30 days, 45 days. Does that mean you're losing a person there or just accumulated work?
In both options, there is a layoff of a filled position at the Resource Protection Specialist 2 level. The difference between the two is in the first option, the building inspection staff would be able to do some minor backfilling and help out code enforcement so that you wouldn't see as big of a decrease as if that wasn't able to occur. In the second option, because you've reduced the building inspection staff to three-quarter time, they really are not or less available to backfill code enforcement. And that's why you see that bump increase in the resolution time.
Right. Seeing no other lights on, we have a tentative motion on the floor to adopt option one. I'll go ahead and call the question. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
So that motion fails.
Mr. Chair, if I may, sir.
Sure.
I think if we go with option two, and as responsible as Ms. Griffin and her department is, I think we can pull through these hard times. But I would not suggest that we take the money out of contingency funds for the reasons that the $1.4 million came to us thanks to Slocia and their help. And taking that money, putting back into a rehire who will be members of their union is giving back to them what they helped us save a little bit. So let me make a motion that we adopt option two and the money comes out of the 1.4 savings thanks to Slocia members.
I'll second that. Failing of option one, I think that's a reasonable second choice. The reduction of the full-time building inspectors to three-quarter time, as we discussed before, with planning, they think they can make that work. In their service impacts, you note that they say that there's no guarantee of next-day inspection, but it doesn't preclude the possibility that inspections will be conducted next day as much as possible. And I think the other thing we noted was that in reducing the building inspectors to three-quarter time, we preserve them on staff, and as work picks up, we have the ability to revisit this, and when conditions warrant, put them back to full time and keep it scaled with the needs of the building industry.
And I believe hopefully the market changed for the better, and we're being flexible to come back, and just like the department came to us when the business wasn't there and money needed to keep them afloat, we did that. So we're not in concrete what we do as much as I like to see us move forward. But when urgencies, emergencies of what a positive or negative impact comes to us, we've been able to agenda as an item and bring it back. Yes, at that time it will require a 4/5 vote rather than a 3-2, but I think we're all sensitive as how best we serve our customers.
Okay. Let me go to the clerk so we don't get too far down this discussion without hearing from her.
Well, the question was the $1.4 million, that's the funds that are currently held in the health agency's budget, right? Correct? I just wanted that clarified for the record.
And that's where I want to see it come. I don't know how Mr. Ham will respond to that, and I'll be happy to hear what he has to say. But my thinking was that this was a savings comes to us from SLOSIA, and by adding the members into the planning department is payback to SLOSIA because those are the members. I don't think from the health department, and I stand to be corrected if Mr. Ham or Ms. Daniels want to respond to that. You're all welcome to. I look forward to be educated.
Let me just revisit the proposal that was from the health agency in one way you could handle this. They had proposed to keep $700,000 in the department for the four projects they had noted there,
right,
and to return $700,000 to the general fund to increase contingencies. I think one way mechanically to handle it would, instead of putting $700,000 back to the general fund, to utilize $255,000 of that $700,000 to help pay for this, and the difference would go to the general fund contingency.
And that will be acceptable to me.
Do you want to make that part of the motion? We hadn't, because we hadn't really taken budget action on the disposition of that 1.4.
Let me then, in that case, revisit my motion that we go with option two, and the money comes from the $700 that otherwise to go to general funds that covers this dollar amount, and the rest goes to general fund. Does that clarify?
Right.
Jim Grant,
yeah.
County Administrator. We need to clarify a little bit more. The action that you're taking right now is to take the $255,000 out of the $1.4 million that currently resides in the health agency budgets. And we'll have to decide how we best technically can do that. That's fine. That leaves a portion of the money, $1.145 million, in health agency budget. That's left, and then you would have another decision that you would have to make after this, whether or not you wanted to spend the $700,000 or any part of that or more of it, whatever you'd like.
Whether we want to designate it for the projects that were described or not.
Or move it, yes. So that's a separate decision at that point. So right now the motion would be taking that $255,000 out of the health budget. The remaining $1.14 stays in there until otherwise the decision is made.
Okay. Is Mr. Ham okay with that? Okay. Then that's my motion, Mr. Chair.
And the second concurs. Let me go to Mr. Meacham.
Thanks for all the clarification. I think, because I do concur, I'm going to go along with the option two with that caveat that that could come out of the 1.4, but I hope we get into the next discussion about the remainder of that, because if we can backfill the contingency by the amount that we've taken out to fill this, then I'm all for it. But I want to put money into contingency. I'm really concerned about not having the reserves.
I agree with you, and that's why I didn't want to touch the contingencies, and this routing that we have in front of us will put additional 350-some into the contingencies.
And I think that's just the key for clarity, is that the 255 would come from an adjustment to the health agency budget and not from contingencies.
Correct.
In this instance. And then we can talk,
and we can talk about the other.
Next.
Good.
All right. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted a point of clarification from either Mr. Ham or Ms. Daniels regarding the source of that $1.4 million that's in the health agency. It was my understanding that it was the result of savings from employees within the health agency, and yes, they're members of SLOSIA, but so are lots of other employees of the county. And I just want a clarification on that. And to speak to contingency, absolutely, we should have as much money in there as we can. Previous conversations have been that an adequate contingency is 3%. We've held it at 5% over the years. We used 1%. For the 08-09 that was backfilled with additional revenue that was anticipated, that was unanticipated from the turbine replacement out at Diablo Canyon. We used 1% this year, about $3.7 million, which takes us down to 4% in anticipation of using 1% perhaps next year as one-time money. And I think, again, taking 2% of that contingency, I would rather do that than taking it from savings in the health agency that was generated within the health agency. But, Mr. Hamm, what is the source of that 1.4 million?
Thank you, Supervisor Patterson. Jeff Hamm, Health Agency Director. It's actually both. There's no question that it's a result of the SLOSIA's agreement to defer cost of living or prevailing wage increases in 2009-10. As I pointed out yesterday, had we known about that in advance, the length of the list of cuts that are embedded in the recommended budget for the health agency would have been much shorter. So you can look at it. It certainly is a result of the decision that was reached around salary increases for next year. But it came out of service. It's service level reductions in the health agency that resulted from the fact that we didn't know in advance. An argument can be made that if you left it all in the health agency, we would buy back the bottom 1.4 million of the cut list that we wouldn't have had to submit in the first place if we had known about it.
Yeah, and that was my understanding, and I appreciate that, and that's why I had suggested it come out of contingency rather than your budget. So thank you for that clarification. I'm going to support the motion. I think option one, with the revenue coming out of contingency, is a better solution from my perspective, but I didn't have support among my colleagues for that, so I will support option two and Supervisor Assagian's motion.
Proposal. Thank you, Mr. Harrison. All right. Very good. Thank you, Ed. Concludes discussion, and we will do this on a roll call then.
Mr. Assagian.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Very good. And we thank you. Thank you again, Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to assure that the board had actually taken action on Fund Center 290, our housing fund center, yesterday when you took action. Since we had the tentative conceptual...
The conceptual tentative motion... yes, I think...
You mean community development?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Thank you, Ms. Journey, for
very
bringing
good.
This back to us.
Yeah. So let me... And thank you, Mr. Hamm, for your cooperation.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, everybody's still out here. We are still... But we're winding it down here.
I love in this room.
I do have two requests to speak in public comment, but also want to poll colleagues as to whether they do want to take any further consideration of the funds in the health agency budget and come to some understanding of whether we want to include that in our tentative motions for the day.
Personally, I'd like to see us move with that, and then that's another piece out of the way.
Okay, very good. Let me do this, since we've had two commenters very patiently here. Let me open it to public comment. Technically, items not on the agenda since we dealt with it yesterday, but if you would come to the lectern, please. Ms. Julie Miller, followed by Yvonne Hill-Printup.
Thank you for your time. My name is Julie Merrill. I'm a registered nurse and board-certified lactation consultant. I'm here as a concerned healthcare professional. I've been working in maternal child health for 29 years in this county. For the last 6 years, I've been working at an area hospital that refers to the breastfeeding clinic for outpatient care. I'm here to speak up for those newborns and their parents. In the last few days, it has come to my attention that the availability of the clinic will be restricted to community health center patients only. This will happen in a short 2 weeks. June 26, we've been told. This, if your board chooses to approve the budget from CHC, will greatly impact the majority of the breastfeeding couplets who in the past have used the breastfeeding county clinic and the breastfeeding one room. With the closure of the breastfeeding clinic at General Hospital 5 years ago, the CHC clinics were contracted to provide the ongoing services. An outpatient breastfeeding clinic has been an integral part of our maternal child services in the county for more than 30 years. San Luis Obispo has only one privately run breastfeeding service available with Andrea Heron. The county's blossoming population, already underserved in this pivotal preventative health service, would be severely damaged with the new cutback. The crisis can possibly be averted. What was the original contract with the CHC in regards to maintaining the breastfeeding clinic? How are they using the $80,000 grant money obtained in partnership with WIC and First Five this year? This grant was to improve breastfeeding services and outlying clinics for any couplet in need, not exclusively CHC patients. What happened to the original grant monies that operated under General Hospital but transferred to CHC? With the outsourcing of county maternal child health to CHC, accountability and care have become convoluted. It is difficult to ascertain the direction and credibility of CHC with no direct dialogue. Hence, our choosing to address this issue with the Board of Supervisors. We are devastated that so little communication or forewarning of the cutbacks was shared and at such a late date. I am formally requesting a meeting with the Board of Supervisors and responsible CHC administration to clarify responsibilities and the intent of the board in this manner. We need to ensure adequate ongoing breastfeeding care until an alternative can be found for the private and Medi-Cal couplets. What plans have been made?
Thank you, Ms. Merrill. Your time is up. I appreciate it. Ms. Hill-Printup.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Hill-Printup. I'm also a registered nurse and board-certified lactation consultant. I don't want to repeat everything that Julie went over, so a couple of points I wanted to bring up. I am employed at the breastfeeding clinic, two community health centers, as a board-certified lactation consultant. We see about 2,100 visits a year, and we practice in San Luis as well as the outlying communities. There's three of us consultants, and what they have proposed is to cut two of the three. The notice was just given on Friday, and so that's the effective date of June 26th. As Julie had mentioned, that we've been in business for 30 years. Another concern is the warm line that takes calls 7 days a week and gets between 20 and 40 calls a day. You are probably familiar with this from 5 years ago when the whole controversy happened when General Hospital closed and there was a question on how to continue the breastfeeding services. Community health centers did step up to the plate and took it over. Now the contract is ending, and with a two-week notice, we just feel like that's not enough to possibly research and find out where else we could practice. We would like to ask, because this is a public health concern, for at the very least an extension, a 90-day extension, so that we could perhaps research into the community and give community input and have a plan of action of could we practice somewhere else and keep the breastfeeding clinic and the warm line open to serve the community. I would like at this point to ask if there's any questions from the board.
All right, thank you. Ms. Hill-Printup, you wanted to conclude your remarks. I do have a couple of lights on, three lights on up here,
okay.
So we can do it. If there's anything else.
Some of the statistics of San Luis County, we have a 95.1% breastfeeding rate, which is enormous. We are ranked 10th. In the county, in the state, which is out of 50 counties. Those are the recent statistics through the WIC and UC Davis study. We at the clinic are in a unique position to be one of the very first interventions when a mother comes in. It's oftentimes with a baby around the age of day five. So we not only are there to help with breastfeeding, but we're also there to assess any physical, emotional needs of the mother and to have early intervention if there is a medical problem as well as a feeding problem with the infant. We just feel that these services are vital to the community. They've been expected of every parent that's delivering here, and we've been open for 30 years. So we're just here to ask the board for their advice and any suggestions. And I thank you for taking this time.
Sure.
Thank you, Ms. Hill-Prentice. We actually have Mr. Hamm of the health agency indicating he'd be interested in responding.
I'll have some questions.
Jeff Hamm, health agency director again. The CHC contract hasn't been revised. The funding level included in the budget on which your board has acted tentatively does call for a substantial reduction in the grant amount. We've, in the health agency, Dr. Bornstein, Marshall Bollinger, our contract administrator, and I have been in discussions with CHC management for months trying to nail down the likely consequences in terms of the services that they provide that would be necessary as a result of the reduction in funding. But as a technical matter, until your board adopts a reduced amount, it doesn't allow us to activate the insufficient funds clause of the contract and engage in formal negotiations about possible modifications to the terms of the agreement. You'll recall last year in this process, we were advised that certain consequences would result, and those consequences did not result. The bottom line is the requirements of the existing agreement will remain in effect until modified terms can be reached between the county and CHC. It was just yesterday morning that I was informed through a kind of a funny, circuitous fashion that I think 9 is the number I was advised. CHC employees were given 2-week layoff notices. And it was some of that was attributed in the information that we received by the person who was reporting that information to the reduction in the county grant amount. I immediately asked, because I was on my way down here, I immediately asked Marsha Pollinger to contact Dr. Bacous or someone at CHC and find out if that was the case, because they'll be in breach of their agreement if they unilaterally make changes in the terms and conditions of the contract before we have an opportunity to meet with them and discuss the consequences of the reduction in the grant. So it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing. We've been talking with them for months, but have not gotten down to any decisions. Now, they have given us a list of things that they would suggest would be necessary. But again, to the extent that any of those things are required in our existing agreement with them, they're subject to negotiations, and they can't be implemented until we bring an agreement back to your board. I was assured by Dr. Bacous and directly through Marshall Bollinger that the reductions that they had made were associated with the elimination of the optional scope of benefits issues that are state Medi-Cal funding issues, reductions in funding for chiropractic care, adult dental, podiatry, etc., that they were not reductions associated with the reduction in the county grant, because Dr. Bacous knows they can't do that. So this is the first the second time in 2 days that I've heard that there may be information from CHC management flowing to employees about reductions in service and them attributing those reductions to changes in the contract that haven't occurred yet.
Okay.
So I hope that, sorry for the long-winded explanation, but I hope that provides some additional
importance. That's in context.
Mr. Patterson, we have a couple lights on here. We'll see if we have questions. Yeah. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you. Mr. Hamm, before you get too far from the mic, are you familiar with the breastfeeding clinic that's been referred to this morning?
Yes.
Do you know if it's one of you said categorically that the programs were related to state funding. At least that's what you'd been originally told.
That's what they told me yesterday when I called them on the possibility that they would, in advance of a change in our agreement, be making modifications to those issues, to those services that they're contractually obligated to provide. They did. In their first round of here's what we would propose to the county to do with the reduction in the grant, they did include reducing the lactation consultation services that they've been providing since we contracted with them in 2004. As we delved further into that issue, it was one of 8 or 10 possible ways that they would go about reducing the scope of services they provide. It became clear to us that there is the First Five grant that was referred to. It's about $80,000 or so that actually flows through the county, and then we contract with CHC to provide those services.
Separately?
Separately. Those services are intended to be lactation services, breastfeeding consultation services for individuals who have no other payer source. They are providing services to Medi-Cal beneficiaries, and they are providing services to privately insured individuals. So we were in the process of working through them what the consequences of that possible change would be relative not only to the BABES grant that was referred to, that's a first five grant, but also to their ability to bill privately insured individuals whom are referred to the clinic that these ladies are referring to, that they that CHC bills third-party payers for, as well as Medi-Cal beneficiaries, who they also can bill for. So there's some questions Dr. Orstein and Jan Campbell, who's our MCH, our maternal and child health person, yesterday was talking on the phone about making sure that we're maximizing the revenues that are available to support the services through private insurers and through Medi-Cal, and that we're meeting the obligations of our first five grant, the BABES grant. So the dialogue about this is ongoing right now, and they should not be in a position of making any changes
right.
until we've concluded that analysis and brought back revised terms of the contract to your board.
Okay, and that doesn't get initiated really until we actually adopt a budget with the funding recommendation for CHC.
I've got a letter from last year drafted ready to go. I would send it based on the tentative action that you, when you conclude the action tomorrow, that's when I would send. I wouldn't wait until the resolution. I would send it to them to give them as much notice as possible.
Very good. Thank you. That answers my questions, and I just want to thank you ladies for bringing it to our attention sooner rather than later, because you heard the discussion from Mr. Hamm here. I think it might be premature.
Mr. Shadian, question for Mr. Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, ladies, and appreciate your emails. I couldn't respond because I didn't have the entire story as what was really going on, and thank you. Mr. Hamm, I'm aware of WIC because they do come in front of the First Five Commission, and with your help when there were areas where we needed to maintain the services such as CHDP, it came to First Five Commission. And those services very well qualify for First Five funding, and with 1D failing, we maintain the dollar amounts that are coming our way unless they get smarter or don't know what the proper word to call folks in Sacramento anymore. I'm looking forward to have a meeting with you ladies, which I will include Mr. Hamm and also Mrs. Hughes from First Five Commission. Just want to change my head for a moment as a chairperson of the First Five Commission. I think we can, once we know what it is, I trust Mr. Hamm being very capable of working with us and with CHC. I don't think they can just walk away. Worst case scenario, I do support a 90-day till we know exactly where to go, how to get funding. If it becomes an emergency, which we have had cases in front of First Five, we've been able to deal with that even though if you're not on our radar screen. So what we need to do, I'll be more than happy, before you leave, if you leave me a phone number where my office can contact you and we can put our heads together, but not before we clarify as what the end result is from CHC's decisions. So be happy to work with you, wearing two different hats. With Mr. Hamm's input, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you, Mr.
Right,
Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Hamm, stay by because you're up next. Thank you, ladies, for coming. We'll go ahead and close it to
so
public.
Write it down for me.
Public comment at this point. Bring it back to the board for consideration of any other uses of the monies identified from the health agency budget. We'd like to refresh our memory on that, Mr. Buckshire.
Yeah, why don't we could pull up the PowerPoint and I'll go back to the proposals from the health agency as a reminder. There we go. So the 1.4, the health agency had proposed to return about $700,000 to the general fund, would be general fund contingency. And then the listing here, you can see the four projects that they were recommending one time for the other half to be utilized. Obviously, the total dollar amount is to about $1.15 million at this point for further consideration.
Right. Let me lead off, if I could, in looking at the in looking at the projects that the health agency has proposed, you know, whereas you'd indicated, Mr. Hamm, that the cut list would have been shorter had the action of SLOSIA been known earlier. You also, I think, acknowledged in your comments yesterday that this really is a one-time deal, or at least we're treating the agreement that has come to SLOSIA for before us as something that you know, eventually we're going to be having to get back into the prevailing wage adjustment business, and that's going to happen. So the proposals you put forward were characterized as one-time proposals for use of those funds. Is that correct?
Yeah. Initially, we thought of attempting to buy back the whole second portion of the cut list. We submitted about $3 million of reductions to get us to 5% below GFS, as everyone was asked to do. And admin staff realized that wasn't going to be enough to propose a balanced budget. Everybody was asked to come up with another 5. We were asked to come up with a list totaling another 10%. As we looked at those things on that second list, we realized that some of them were probably not what we would propose to do if all of a sudden there was no question about what was going to happen with that $1.4 million. Of course, there is always a question about what's going to happen with it when under these circumstances. The dollar amount in the budget that's before you for the CHC contract, for example, is $1.4 million less than they're receiving in the current fiscal year. That was $1 million reduction in the first list and another $400,000 reduction on the second list. We have had some difficulty getting from CHC management very far into the kind of detailed analysis that I would expect and that all the departments are involved in as we develop a list of consequences of possible service level reductions. They're just not used to us being that far into their business, and so there's a little bit of pushback there. Initially, we thought that one of the things that should be on that list was to restore the second portion of the reduction to the CHC grant. But then we saw their 09-10 budget. And in their macro 09, the CHC's 09-10 budget, they're not going to get any smaller next year. They don't propose to get any smaller overall than they are right now. That generated a whole series of questions that we haven't been able to get to the bottom of with them yet. So I offer that up as a, you know, in the transparent way, in discussions that I've had recently with Mr. Grant and Mr. Buckshy about the idea that perhaps half of that 1.4 would be available to the board during the course of your deliberations on the recommended budget. If the other half could be, we could be allowed to leave it in where it is right now, spread across our various fund centers, that it would make sense to propose one-time uses for that money. And so that's why we came up with the list that we came up with. We started out with a much longer list than $700,000. One of the things, I don't know if you want to put it back up or not, but one of the things is a contribution to our behavioral health electronic health record project, which is something you'll be hearing about in the future. We have $4 million of MHSA money, Mental Health Services Act, Prop 63 money, for a project that we think is going to be about a $5 million project. I would much rather have the $1 million than have to come and ask for it out of, you know, the five-year capital improvement plan or some other designated reserve or something like that. But that number is 195 because we started with the biosolids EIR. We have a couple projects that we need, the Atascadero facility. It's also some modifications to the annex building behind the hospital that we're going to have to make some modifications in order to occupy that space. The overhead cost is simply when we lose funding for categorical programs, AIDS funding is likely to be reduced. We're talking about very many other reductions in categorical funding that in this possible state budget. Even if we eliminate those services, we're left with the overhead that had been allocated to those programs that we can't cover, and we can't just shift it to other programs. There's no way to finance it. So we sort of got to the mental health system, which I had $1 million down there on that line. Just $195,000 to add up to $700,000.
Lost a couple of a decimal point there.
Right.
I guess the one.
So just to conclude my comments, I mean, in terms of how we got to where we are, that's how that happened.
Right.
I agree with the comments Ms. Daniels made yesterday. A year of extension of important services and their elimination a year from now instead of now, there's certainly value in that.
if we had an opportunity to put together this was our opportunity to put together a list, and this is our list, and I stand by it. But if it was $800,000 or $900,000 instead of seven, we would certainly be able to come up with well justified uses for those funds.
And your department, your agency, certainly one that's taken another significant hit in its ability to provide services for a variety of reasons. I guess the one question I had, maybe a little bit of a detailed one, was on the biosolids EIR, and we talked just a touch about it yesterday, which is certainly there's motivation from the special districts who operate sewage treatment plants here to need to dispose of the sludge. And so I'm wondering, and just in terms of the strategy of this, although this is being broadcast publicly, it's not exactly a closed session that we're dealing with here, whether we might want to hold off on allocating anything for the EIR until we can see what we can generate in terms of support from the producers as well.
Well, I had my choice. My recommendation would be that other than the $255,000 that you just earmarked to be removed from our fund centers and put in the planning department's budget, that you would leave the rest of it right where it is. We wouldn't be able to do anything with those funds. They're currently allocated to salary and benefit appropriations, and we're not going to spend them there. My plan was to work with Mr. Grant, Mr. Buckshy, and with health agency management. This is not my list. This is a list that Dr. Bornstein, Dr. Baylor, Mike Stevens, and I put together through some internal negotiations. If it were possible for your board to just leave the rest of it where it is, we'll have to come back with a proposal to spend any of it on anything else.
Right.
And as I mentioned yesterday, even though I guess the cat's out of the bag in a sense, that doesn't mean we have to spend that amount on the biosolids yet, or we don't even know what it's going to cost.
There we go.
And we will continue to pursue partner agency participation in what that is ultimately going to cost.
Good. Let me go to my left, Mr. Patterson, and then Mr. Meacham.
Yes, thank you. And speaking to the biosolids EIR, when we had the conversation about what to do with our land application of biosolids ordinance, it was originally recommended that we just extend it for another 4 years. And hearing from many of my rural constituents, the feeling was that, we needed to move forward. It had already been delayed prior to the last delay, and I'm actually convening a meeting Thursday morning among some wastewater treatment operators as well as others to take a look at how we might process biosolids to make them more usable for land application or other uses. And so I am supportive of funding for the EIR, but I'm also very supportive of going to the industry and including the Regional Water Quality Control Board Agency and Integrated Waste Management Authority and others to see if we can't help fund that effort so we can come up with a solution to the biosolids that we generate here in the county. As I said earlier this morning, support leaving that $1.4 million minus $255,000 that we just appropriated elsewhere in the health agency budget. The savings were generated there by employees within the health agency, and I think that they ought to go towards those programs. So that would be what I would support.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you. And I don't have any questions, Jeff. Thank you very much. But on the biosolids, we're going to have to deal with this at some point. So I think with this allocation directed in this direction, as what they've established on their list here, I agree with this. I think that these items, and in particular the capital improvements for the Itasca Hospital renovation, I've toured that facility, and it's in dire need. It's in dire need of some help. But in addition to that, I would like the remainder of this to go into contingencies so that because we are going to have to, before this year is out, we're going to be coming back here and probably looking at adjustments in some form or fashion. At that point in time, if we have that contingency money available, we may be able to address those when the time comes.
Right, thank you. I have no other lights on right this minute. I did get one request to speak on this topic. Mr. Greening, if you'd like to come forward, that would be great.
Thank you.
I am Eric Greening, and I'm glad we're having this discussion, and I do believe that this should, if possible, be used in direct health service to human beings, first and foremost, to the extent that it's endangered. We're apparently just getting a very fragmentary picture of what services are being cut or threatened to be cut in the CHC contract. And until we have a real picture of that to compare these capital projects with, I don't know that we can make a decision other than to essentially leave it where it is for now and trail that decision until you have that those discussions. But I do question whether we're ready to move to an EIR on if it's on the three pages that we saw with a comment period until February 1st, and I haven't seen any revised draft of a biosolids ordinance since that time. That draft was lacking a lot of particulars that I think still need to be fleshed out before we do an EIR on. Obviously, alternatives analysis could be a good part of an EIR and might give us better than alternatives. But that, for example, relied on EQ as the threshold, whereas the actual previous direction was that we would develop local standards based on locally developed information. I'd rather see any biosolids efforts go into getting a complete ordinance with a complete set of criteria for notification, public process, et cetera, relative to land application sites and all sorts of other things that were not in that very minimal draft ordinance, rather than spend $250,000 on trying to determine the environmental impacts, which might be much smaller if we do an ordinance right. But on top of that, I guess the question I would ask relative to SLOSIA and the tremendous offer, I guess, what do we expect in the out years? Since this is apparently one-year money, which is why we tend to be biased towards spending it on capital projects, but we have continuing needs. There are people who are in need this year. They're in front of us now. It's the same question we have with stimulus, the frustration we have of losing people who are providing service now that is needed now because of the bias toward capital projects to spend one-time money in one way. I would hope we would look at the total continuum of human needs, and if we can help get people through another year now and keep people working to provide those services now and deal with each year one year at a time, maybe that's the best way to get through a year-to-year uncertainty of where this economy is going. And the people are in need now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. No other requests to speak. I'll close it to the public and bring it back for the pleasure of the board.
Make a motion, Mr. Chairman, if I could. I'll move that the potential additional costs that were not anticipated be accommodated by the 1.4 with the addition of the 255, 206 going to the planning, the remainder to go into contingencies.
Second. Cool. Let's clarify. Yeah, I guess we need a little clarification. Maybe Mr. Buckshy is the best person to ask for it.
To make sure the $700,000 for the projects that were noted by the health agency, that money would remain in the health agency budget.
Mm-hmm.
If my math's correct, the remainder of $444,794 would be moved from the health agency budget to general fund contingency.
Right. That's what I have.
Okay.
All right, so the math checks. Staff concurs. I heard multiple seconds. Madam Clerk, do we need a roll call on that one as well?
The funds, I see.
All right, let's do that then.
Mr. Meacham?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
I'm blanking now, Mr. Asashian.
I do cause that now and then. Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. In terms of open session, we will reconvene tomorrow, but we are going to be going to closed session, and I don't know, Mr. Grant, you want to speak to that, but let me go to Mr. Jensen first and ask for an estimate on closed session.
Under 30 minutes.
All right.
Oh,
thank you.
He's
a wily one that way. So, I don't have any requests to speak on closed session. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll close it to the public.
And go to Mr. Grant.
One item.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, there's been a lot of discussion about the VTO program, and as I sat here thinking about it, it would be nice, maybe we can get some direction to staff to take a look at the program itself, how it's being utilized, and get a report back to you so that we know whether or not we actually need to expand the program. I don't know if it's been utilized the way it should be or whether to what extent it's been utilized. So Dan may have more information on that now, but it just seems to me we need to take a look at the framework that's been developed, the utilization, and then bring something back to you that we could discuss.
That got the lights going here.
like
Christmas on the dais. Mr. Berkshire, did you want to have any comment to start there?
I think that's certainly fine to me. I do have a few numbers as a follow-up from yesterday, if I can get those here. There was in the 09-10 budget about $650,000 of VTO built in. In 08-09, there was about $260,000 of VTO built in. So in terms of the $650,000 this year, I mean, that is a fair bit. It's at a minimum about a 6.5 FTE that was avoided in terms of layoffs by doing so. It does vary by department. Some have utilized it more so than others. Quick look here is probably about 12 departments that have utilized it out of the 22, so roughly half. But obviously, if it's something that we want to look into further, we can do that and give you a more extensive report if you'd like.
I guess my thought was is that it appears that there's still capacity within the program itself. So I'm not sure that we need to discuss expanding that until we actually
see if we're using
see
what
if
we
we're
got.
Using it.
Okay, Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Graham, in that analysis, I think the issue that was raised relative to VTO is that if there was more flexibility in the use, and I realize that varies within each individual department, the ability of them to be flexible enough to accommodate all the employees' needs in order for the employees to use VTO. You might, in your analysis, ask the department heads or those that actually would administer it, conditions that they have on the use or constraints that they have within their department on the potential use. I think it would give us a better idea of what the potential is.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Shachin?
Thank you. I definitely would like to see that come back as I brought it up yesterday in our discussion. I know Mr. Seebach has his input, so I'm assuming that administration auditor's office will put your heads together and bring us your findings, the pros and the cons of extending the program.
Right.
Speaking to some employees, they were interested in to having that flexibility to have additional volunteer days off, but obviously there's always the other side of the story, and look forward to hearing from you, gentlemen.
All right.
And ladies.
Sounds like direction has been given.
Thank you.
And
is there a time frame, Mr. Chair, that we expect this to come back?
Probably have time tomorrow.
Yeah, really.
You're right on that.
For a bit of something.
Well, it's going to take a little while to put that together, I'd say.
I would say after the short break we have.
We reconvene this afternoon.
That's right, yeah. Let's say round
July.
About the 1st of August, late July, 1st
that's
of August.
That's a great time.
All right. Thank you. And we will return to report out of closed session in a bit.
Some of us will.
Some of us will.